It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Philip Elmer DeWitt is here. He's out for WWDC. Mike Elgin visits us from Fez, Morocco. It's the middle of the night, and they're eating because it's Ramadan. And Phil Libin, formerly of Evernote, he'll announce his new company. We'll talk about what to expect WWDC. Lots of rumors. But can Apple really compete against Amazon's Echo and the Google Home? We'll find out next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 617, recorded Sunday, June 4th, 2017. Ask for the camel with two humps. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. To get my special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWiT. And by Carbonite. Keep your business safe this year. Protect your business from ransomware and hacker attacks with automatic cloud backup from Carbonite. Try it free at Carbonite.com. And don't forget to use the offer code TWIT for two free bonus months if you decide to buy. And buy Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/TWIT and using the promo code TWIT. And by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, right now you can get $5 off one of their shave sets, including the limited edition Father's Day set, when you go to harrys.com/TWiT. Time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. We've got a very prestigious panel, a very dignified, I feel like I'm sitting amongst my my betters. Philip Elmer DeWitt is here. First time in studio.
That's true.
Philip, legendary Mac journalist for years. We were at Fortune and now runs PED 3.0. Or I shouldn't say the point because that'll add an extra dot. 3.0.com.
Apple 3.0.
Apple 3.0. But it is PED 30.com.
Correct.
And you're in normally you live in New England, right?
Yeah, in the Connecticut River Valley.
Nice. That's beautiful there. Yeah.
Different. It's farmland like here.
Yeah.
But we don't have hills shaped like buttocks.
Are you implying that our hills are shaped like
they
buttocks?
They are. They're almost badunkadunk.
We got the badunkadunk of Petaluma, ladies and gentlemen. That's good. See, it takes a fresh eye for me to really appreciate my own hometown. Well, you're out here for WWDC. We'll talk about that in just a second. But let me introduce the rest of the panel. Phil Libin is also here, famed as a founder and CEO of Evernote. And the last time you were here, you were a VC, but it looks like you started a new company.
I did. We are launching a new company tomorrow. It's our first day of being a CEO again. So,
wow. Congratulations.
Tomorrow. Today's Sunday, right? Yeah, tomorrow.
You shed 80 pounds today. And you gained a company.
I did.
I want to ask you how you lost. You look so good.
Thank you. You do too.
Thank you. You lost 80 pounds by fasting.
Yes. It turns out when you stop eating, you lose weight.
It's a remarkable revelation.
Amazing.
All Turtles, we'll talk about that in a little bit, is your new company. It is an AI startup studio. I think this is a language I don't even understand anymore, but we will talk about that in a bit. But first, let me also say hello all the way from Morocco. It's Mike Elgin.
You need a rooftop.
You need a fez if you're going to be in Fez. Do they wear fezes in Fez?
Are you sitting down, Leo? I don't want to break this to you, but I guess I have to. Almost nobody wears a fez in Fez. They mostly wear American baseball hats.
Yeah, caps. Yeah, a fez is kind of our, I don't know why, for some strange reason, our trademark. We all have TWiT fezes. I guess it's the last bastion of fezes. First, Ataturk kicks the fez out of Turkey, and now Morocco has gone baseball caps. We're going to keep the fez alive here. And this is part of your nomadic lifestyle. I know you're going to have a gastro nomad experience here early next year, right?
We are. We haven't finalized the date. We decided to do Barcelona first, then the Prosecco growing area of Italy. and probably Mexico City. Oh. But we went to Italy to check it out, and man, that part of the world is absolutely stunning. But the first one's in Barcelona in September.
Can't wait. Gastronomad.
Yeah, really excited about it.
We should also mention that it is Ramadan, and that is a very important month-long festival, of course, in your part of the world, as well as here. And because Ramadan, speaking of fasting,
it's a festival.
You fast all day, no water, no food. But that means feasting and parties at night. And because you're on the roof, you're surrounded by parties. Mostly, it sounds like kids.
That's right.
That's right.
I mean, people really celebrate it here. And,
We can hear the kids. That's
right. Nobody loses any weight because they do. They really feast, and it's really a lot of fun. We've actually broken the fast at around 7:30 p.m. The big cannon that goes off. You hear the call to prayer, and then you hear this big cannon, and then everybody can feast, and they all sit around the family together. So we did that with a couple of families, and the food is delicious. Everybody's very happy. And then they pretty much stay up most of the night. They eat three squares during the night, and they have to be finished eating 3:30 in the morning, and then there's no food from like 3:30 to like 7:30.
Oh, that's hardly a fast.
Well, it is a fast. It's just it's not a weight loss fast. It's just it's a religious fast.
It's food.
You know, it's interesting when I started reading about fasting, because it was you, by the way, who triggered this all, Phil. And then I talked to Kevin Rose, and he made a fasting app, and on all. It seems like all my friends were doing this new thing, which is intermittent fasting. It's not fasting for extremely lengthy periods of time. It's briefer fast. How long do you fast, though? I shouldn't say that.
2 to 8 days.
Yeah.
Like, so
eight's a lot. I haven't done, two is plenty for me. But that's more for health and weight loss. Ramadan is more, it's a religious fast. But it seems every major religion actually has a fasting tradition of some kind.
Yeah. It's goes back a long way, and it's kind of fun.
Yeah. I actually have enjoyed it. But anyway, we'll talk about that some other time, because this is TWiT, and we're supposed to talk about tech, and it looks like tomorrow's a big day. The Worldwide Developers Conference, Apple's yearly event. They haven't had a public event since September, 8 months, right? Something like that. Right.
My wife calls it WWD-40.
Well, it is the squeaky developer that gets the grease or something. I think I'm of two minds. First of all, there have been very few leaks about WWDC this
year. It's a weird, I don't know if it's because, what's his name, who went to Bloomberg?
Mark Gurman's still getting the leaks.
Yeah, but they're not. There was one WWD where he just had everything.
He knew it all.
Yeah. And
I think, so that's the two minds. One is he does know it all, and there's nothing. There's new laptops, maybe a Siri device, iOS 11. Mac OS, we've decided it's going to be Catalina, by the way. Okay. I just thought I'd say that. And then there's not much else to say. Or Apple could announce augmented reality and clear phones and a new iPad.
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. I think he's leaked probably the biggest thing is probably going to be the Siri speaker, whatever they call it.
And it's hard to get excited about productizing Siri, which is such a laggard.
Well, that's first they have to fix Siri, and I think that's supposedly one of the things.
They've been fixing Siri since they bought it. I know. It's not going to get any better.
It's embarrassing. someone did a study, came out last week, and they rated, it was like 5,000 queries, and who did you see this? Did you cover this already?
Yeah.
And Siri led in just completely wrong answers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I swear at Siri more than I do anything else. In fact, it's a joke, running joke with Lisa and me. My wife, well, for some reason, has this undying faith in Siri. She'll ask Siri stuff, and I'll just go, no.
I gave up on that. No, so, you know, I have Alexa and Google Home. I'm trying to get them to talk to each other, but it doesn't work yet. But you know, you throw different kinds of questions.
Their domains differ, but they're basically roughly equivalent. Cortana is the next one down, maybe.
I've never used that. Is that good?
Yeah, so it's better than Siri.
Yeah, well, that's not saying much.
Why, you're into AI, Phil. Why is this so hard? What is Apple doing wrong? Why can't Apple create a product that at least competes with Alexa?
I mean, I think a lot of what they do in Siri is pretty impressive. It's just a more diffuse use case. You know, Alexa has specific interactions and use cases that it's really good at. It isn't really trying to be a general purpose assistant, and I think Siri tries to be a little bit more general purpose.
It's a lot easier to say, well, I could play music for you. I can do a kitchen timer. I have these domains that I can work
in. I miss Alexa, like, when I'm traveling. And
I do,
Alexa's not around. Like, I kind of miss it. Yeah.
my theory about Alexa is that...
Let's call her, by the way. Let's do this. Everybody at home a favor and call her Echo.
Okay,
I started it, and I apologize, because it really is going to trigger people.
What really impresses people about Echo is that it understands you so frequently. And I always assume that that's because it has a plug in the wall. So it can power seven microphones,
right.
And that's where the strength of its
well, if that's the case, then in an Apple Siri device that is plugged in,
they should
has
be able
Array
to do
mics.
It.
The other part of the rumor is that it will have better speakers. Echo has always had kind of weak speakers.
Yeah.
Google's were a little bit better. I think that was one area Google decided to excel in. Mike, did you bring your Google Home with you to Morocco?
I didn't, but I always bring my Echo with me everywhere we travel.
You have an Echo with you? Does it work there?
It works great. It won't default to where you are. So we have to specify. If we want the local weather, we have to specify Fez, Morocco. But other than that, it works great. It plays music. It plays our Amazon music and so on. And that's one of the reasons why we bring the full-size Echo, because it's also like we can always have music, you know, everywhere we go.
So you don't mind those speakers. You consider those adequate.
They're certainly adequate. It's hard to think of any sort of speaker system that's that compact that would be significantly better than that.
Yeah, compared to any Bluetooth speaker, it's okay. Yeah.
I'm waiting for the Sonos integration.
Yeah, we were supposed to get that 6 months ago. I think there's something not working quite right yet. I agree. That will, frankly, Sonos, if you had to pick somebody who missed the boat, it's Sonos. If they could have put that technology into those speakers, that would have been a killer product.
The school was Dermot.
Oh, go ahead, Mike.
I'm sorry. I also think this is an opportunity for Apple to actually get into that Sonos space, because really Sonos has a Apple-esque kind of reputation for high quality and a compact size that's very elegant to use and so on. And I think Apple would like to be in that space, except for just dumb speakers are not interesting enough for Apple. If they can have really high quality speakers, and again, I don't expect them to necessarily do this, but I think they should do this. Really high quality speakers that could also double as extra speakers for the Apple TV experience. I think that would be great. Either way, it doesn't matter. The Apple fans are all going to jump on this thing no matter what. It's going to be Siri. It's going to be adequate for lots and lots of people no matter what. And I believe, and I said this before in the show, Leo, I think this whole smart speaker thing is a stopgap. And eventually, we're going to be wearing this kind of thing somewhere on our body, probably in glasses, probably, AirPod type of integrations. You know, give it 5 years or 6 years or 7 years, I think that smart speaker is going to seem kind of antiquated.
Yeah, but five years is a good product life. I mean, that's,
The problem is, I mean, I can see Apple doing the hardware, but I just don't think that they will ever catch up to, you know, frankly, it's going to be Google that's going to win. Because while Echo is ahead, because they launched earlier, Google's the one collecting all the signals. Google knows more about. Yeah, but you don't think? Well, you're an AI guy again, Phil. You don't think that's giving them a head start?
I think the main lesson about AI right now is the most important thing are really well thought out specific use cases.
Not data, not training.
No, it's like it's interaction. It's like who's got the best attention to detail about. What are the great experiences that you're going to have with this thing?
Is that because we're at early days and so general artificial intelligence is way off, so we have to be domain specific? Or because ultimately, wouldn't we want something that was generally intelligent?
No, why?
Because then I don't have to know what domain that particular agent's good at. I can just address a question to it. Isn't that what we wanted? Isn't that why Siri fails?
I don't think so. I think where AI as an industry went wrong is... right in the beginning, right with the Turing test. Like the Turing test was a...
Most AI experts agree that was a dumb...
It's just like it's a bad idea to try to make something that's generally intelligent, especially if the bar you're setting is like human-level intelligence is somehow like the goal.
And it's...
It doesn't make any sense.
That's challenging. Like, and there's so much you could do, much more... So much useful you can do before that.
Everything that I work on starts out being better than human.
Like in a domain.
Exactly. And I don't care about what a person could do. There's plenty of people on the planet that I don't really feel like interacting with. I don't need more of those. I want experiences that are better than what a person can do.
This is AI for misanthropes. All right, I get it now.
So Alexa is much better than a person could be. I'm sorry, Echo is much better than a person could be at the stuff that Echo is good for.
Mm-hmm. And
Siri,
is,
I think,
is different with Echoes.
Say again?
Sorry to interrupt. Amazon is way ahead of the game precisely because of what Phil is saying. They have the Echo look, the Echo show. They have the different types of Echoes, and that's, I think, brilliant to have a different special purpose Echo for every room in the house. Can't wait for the bathroom Echo.
Don't think of it as like a – I don't even think of it as special purpose. I just think about it as like a sharply good experience. That's the products that win. Like once the technology gets to a point where it goes from being an engineering problem to being a product problem, like the products that win are the ones that are the best designed with specific interactions and delightful experiences in mind.
All right. I have a different take on how Apple fits into this. I think Google Home's problem is that it doesn't have a way to monetize it well. Echo has a way to monetize it because people buy more stuff through Amazon because they're using the Echo. Apple has the perfect monetization strategy. They sell the device in large quantities.
But to do that, there has to be a high-margin device.
Yeah.
It has to be more. I mean, an Echo, you can get a Dot for $40 now. You can get all of the entire Echo experience minus the speaker for $40 because Amazon makes it up on the other end. But what would Apple have to charge to make this a valuable product? Hundreds.
It doesn't matter.
Hundreds.
You know, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter because it's Apple.
And they're going to buy it, like Mike said.
One of the things I'm intrigued about is whether Apple can go international fast. Right now, the Echo is dominant, but only in the United States. If Apple can do a smart speaker system and go global, they'll suddenly be ahead of everyone.
Right. And they already have a lot of language stuff under their belt.
I think a lot of this comes down to, like, where is the center of gravity? Where's, like, the center of empathy for each company? And you can tell a lot, I think, about what's going to happen just based on that.
Do you mean empathy or brand reputation?
I mean, what fundamentally is the most important thing to each company? Like for Amazon, like the empathy is really on selling you stuff, right? Whether it's physical products or subscriptions, Amazon Prime or video, like they want you to buy stuff that you love and need and have a good experience with.
Right.
For Google, their fundamental thing that they're about is showing you ads and like getting you to click on stuff. Same as for Facebook.
Right.
For Apple, their fundamental thing is selling you Apple devices. None of these companies has transcended past that original
focus. Apple's services company, too. A lot of their revenue is coming from services. They see that as their biggest growth area.
What's the stuff that they're excellent at? Amazon is world-class at selling this stuff. Apple is right now really world-class at making the devices.
I think Amazon and Apple both share an interest in making it really a good experience for the customer.
Mm-hmm.
And for Amazon, it's a good experience for the shopper.
Yep.
And for Apple, it's a good experience for the user. Google, my experience is not so much. Try to find a human to help you with a Google problem.
I think the Amazon center of gravity is closer to what will make a good assistant, a good AI, than Google's or Facebook's. I think if the company is basically about getting your attention, distracting you, making you click on an ad, like that isn't a quality that you'd want in a friend.
And it's pretty hard to make you listen to ads on a Google Home.
Right, but it's just like you wouldn't accept a person acting that way.
No, of course not.
So I think that that's going to give them a harder time in actually getting to the most amazing AI products. Yeah. Whereas I think Apple and Amazon are better aligned.
I agree with what you're saying, Phil, but I would amend that to say that Apple's genius is not just selling you the hardware, but it's getting money on all the levels. They sell you the hardware. They sell you the software.
Yeah.
They get a third of what other people sell you. And it's all of it. It's the services. It's everything.
I agree.
Subscriptions, you name it. And I think that's a really interesting model for Apple on this kind of device. I mean, if you think about the money that they could make on an app store for the smart speaker, it could be enormous. I mean, I have trouble really picturing it, and nobody's done it well. Amazon certainly has not done the third-party, app thing very well. You have to memorize all this stuff. It's very difficult.
Sure.
If somebody like Apple can crack that, if Siri can actually choose the third-party app, offer it, you can buy it with a command or whatever, then they could be way ahead of the game, and they could be looking at a revenue stream that's comparable in some ways to the iPhone App Store, where it's just very lucrative and they dominate the field for those third-party
I think that's right.
Apps.
And I think Apple had a problem with people asking for music and getting it from either Amazon or Google. Apple really needs them to get it from Apple.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
this is an opportunity they can't.
It will probably, it sounds like then it'll probably be a fairly expensive $400, $500 music device with very good speakers, right?
Yeah, well, you know, it sounded good when they said it had surround sound, and then I looked more closely and it said virtual.
Well, remember they had a speaker once?
Yeah, they did. And I remember Steve Jobs saying he threw out his stereo because he liked the iPod Hi-Fi so much.
Had that, they had that thing.
It
I
was
bought
a
one.
Flop.
I bought one, and then they never spoke about it again.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of it sounds like the most important thing Apple could announce tomorrow, frankly, will be a Siri device.
I think the hardware gets the attention with Apple. I think,
although tomorrow is not a hardware event,
it's a developer event. But Apple has so few events, so few times that they can talk to the press and the public that I think they treat WWDC as a keynote. In the truest sense of the word.
Well, you don't usually get insights into the new hardware, though, at WWDC.
They have from time to time. They've announced Macs before,
well,
several
Mac
times.
Pro, you know, was the headliner then. Yeah. And there's
usually developer-focused stuff. But so I don't know. And even if they announced laptops, I don't think that that would be a big thing. The reason I think the Siri announcement makes a lot of sense is you're talking to developers. You're talking about basically a new ecosystem, a new platform.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
I
developers
mean,
are very critical.
Home we're in. Yeah, if you think about the perfect home run that they could do tomorrow would be to announce this product, have it be super high quality, have there be one or two attributes about it that are surprising, and then say, here's the SDK, everyone, go for it.
It's
kind of hard to imagine that they'd be that far along with it, but that would be amazing if they did that.
It's hard for me to believe that it's really going to be like a high-end or even a medium-end speaker system. I know that's what everyone's saying, and I guess it's likely to be true. To me, it just seems like Apple announces stuff that can grow fairly quickly. And for their target audience, like most people who are Apple fans have high-quality speakers of whatever type.
Oh, so
installed.
You think it'll be a thing you plug in, like an Apple TV, a thing you plug into a system.
I just don't think they're going to do something that's going to take years to roll out.
Right.
Like, I'm a huge Apple fanboy. Right. I've bought just about everything that Apple's ever released.
So
I'm not going to go buy new speakers.
Take Siri in as it stands in the phone and put it in a standalone device? By the way, home automation is also, I think, we kept expecting with HomeKit that they'd deliver a hub. They have yet to deliver a hub. The Apple TV wasn't.
What I would love is for something like Siri would just be the hardware is just super high quality microphones.
Yep.
And it just it integrates well with whatever speakers you've got set up. Like that would be the thing that I would want.
Via Bluetooth?
I don't know, something magic. But I'm not going to, there's no way that I'm buying entirely new speakers tomorrow.
Right.
That's a very good point.
Yep. And so would Apple release something that didn't have the potential to sell, millions of units right away?
The only reason I went that way is because we agreed that large margin was critical as a hardware company, right?
Yes, so. but the large margins are in China for Apple now. So does everybody in China have a super ultra high quality speaker system? I don't think that that's true. And the other thing is that we also know about Apple that they love to control the entire experience. I doubt that Apple's going to want to just say, well, whatever speakers you have around, that's going to be your experience with this. And I can't imagine Apple coming out with a sound experience, a music experience that's inferior to the Echo. It's got to be better than the Echo.
Not much better.
Well, it would be much better than the Echo if it worked well with your existing speakers.
All it would have to do is be stereo.
I agree with Mike, though. I think
the speakers, there's an Echo.
The standalone thing has to be sound better than the other two. The other three is Cortana.
Yeah, and Home actually sounds, well, there is no, Microsoft's been rumored to, but has not announced a standalone Cortana device.
Well, or not at all, right? Or it doesn't have to sound like anything, in which case it won't be compared to it.
Right.
I think that's a little bit more of a commoditized product. That's like the Echo Dot where it is, I mean, I can see the Apple TV doesn't include a television set. It's just a box that connects your.
Yeah. I mean, high-quality speakers are heavy. They're bad for logistics. There's like all sorts of things that make this seem to me like a not Apple product.
Do you see
product?
Maybe two products, one with speakers, one without?
But
maybe?
I mean, Apple already sells third-party speakers in their Apple store and always has. You go in there and there's a big clear speakers and all that kind of stuff. They're already selling speakers. So it seems like they want to sell them.
Isn't Beats fundamentally a speaker manufacturer? I know they're little speakers, but they're speakers. Couldn't we have Beats speakers? By the way, that's a brand that would probably do very well is a Beats, desktop or hi-fi speaker.
To me, that speakers feels like a low margin business and not the kind of thing that would.
The headphone business is a very high margin business. It's a huge high market.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and your pods too.
But how cool is this? None of us has any idea. This is
unusual. Shocking. It's unprecedented.
Reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mark Gurman, where are you on this?
You just
thing,
made WWDC about 100 times more exciting because I was really gearing up for a fairly dull show. But this will be something to watch. What does Apple do with Siri? And when will it be available? This month?
No.
This fall? Probably this fall.
This decade? Probably.
This decade. all right. Well, WWDC is tomorrow. Our coverage begins 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. That is 1700 UTC. We'll be streaming it live. Nathan Olivares-Giles and Megan Maroney will be covering it. And as we always do, Apple has said they're going to stream the keynote. We will do our kind of Mystery Science 3000 version of it. Well, we'll snark away while Tim Cook takes the stage. You know who will not take the stage, and I'm sad to say, is Bozoma. Bozoma. The woman who was so good last year at WWDC. Yeah. It was a fairly dull presentation. And she comes on. She's got great marketing experience. She was working with Apple Music and just lit the place up.
Too much charisma. She can go have her own career. She doesn't need Apple.
They always said she was her own brand.
Yeah.
Right? And, of course, the first thing we did, Bozoma St. John, the first thing we did is, who is this? Where have they been hiding her? But apparently she's tweeted or something that she's on her way elsewhere. Axios says this. She was head of global consumer marketing for Apple Music. All right, let's take a break. Come back with more. Great panel. Esteemed panel. Mike Elgin celebrating Ramadan in Fez, Morocco from the rooftops.
I'm only doing the eating and the feasting part, not the fasting part, just the feasting.
Well, I understand there's some really amazing sweets involved in breaking your fast in Ramadan.
Yes, absolutely. All the food is all the Ramadan food is absolutely delicious.
You're making me very jealous. Phil Libin is also here, formerly a founder and the CEO at Evernote. He's now... And a VC, he's now at All Turtles, a company, an AI company launching tomorrow, all-turtles.com. It's turtles all the way down. I got that reference right
away.
You
did. You were one of the few people.
No, yeah. Really? Geeks know that.
Yeah.
Can we hear a little bit more about the name? Why do you call it All? Or should we do that after the break?
Let's do it after the break. We'll do a tease, which is so silly on a podcast because it just makes people fast forward the commercial. But I can't break old habits, my old radio habits. Coming up in just a moment, what does All Turtles mean? And what is an AI startup studio? Phil, it's great to see you.
Good to see you.
And I do at some point want to talk a little bit about fasting. You look so good. You've lost a lot of weight.
Thank you.
You're feeling good.
I am.
And you inspired me to do it. So
didn't mean to.
Yeah. We should show before and after pictures.
Well, just all you have to do is look at it. Phil's
just do a Google image search.
We've actually watched it because you've been on the show since before you started doing this.
Yeah.
And even since the last time you were on, you've lost quite a bit.
And your beard fell off.
I know. It's amazing.
Are you going to stop fasting?
Sooner or later. Yeah.
I think you have to at some point.
Yeah, you have to eat once in a while. But no, I hope to keep doing it for a long time.
It feels pretty good.
It does.
Is the scary thing.
Yeah.
You're not worried you're going to get into some sort of eating disorder?
No, I'm not.
I mean, like, I don't want to eat anymore. In fact, after I fast, I usually fast for no more than 36 to 42 hours. But after I fast and I eat, I feel terrible because my body's now digesting this food.
That goes away. After a few weeks, I just feel pretty good all the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
He feels good all the time. That's what turtles all the way down means.
Boy, that's great.
Meanwhile, you and I, Philip Elmer DeWitt, PED is here. PED 30 is his tech blog where he writes all about Apple 3.0.
Apple all the time.
All the time, all Apple. He's here for WWDC. Our show today, I added a W. I'm sorry. There's only two. www.dc. That'd be a good domain name.
You just did it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
WWDC. WWD40.
WWD40. Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. If you do mailing in your business, and actually doesn't everybody, but you at least mail bills or brochures. Maybe you're an Etsy seller, an eBay seller. You sell on Amazon and you got to do fulfillment. You should not be going to the post office, my friend. You should not be going to the post office to buy postage. You should not be bringing packages to the post office. I've got a better way, Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print real U.S. postage from your computer and your printer. You don't need a postage meter. That's so 1980s. You don't need anything. You just need what you've got. and stamps.com. Although, I have to say, we've got a special offer that will send you free a USB scale that will really be a nice addition to your stamps.com. You just plop the thing you're going to mail on the scale. Stamps.com will print out the proper postage. They'll even print out a mailing label or print right on envelopes with your company's logo, your return address, barcoding. The post office loves stamps.com. It speeds their automation. They're thrilled to have you use stamps.com, so much so that you know, you can't just pop a package above, I think it's above a pound. You can't just put it in the mailbox. They want you to bring it to the post office so they can look you in the eye and look at the package. Except if you're using stamps.com, no, that's no problem. They'll come and get it because they know stamps.com and they know you. It's an amazing service. Create your stamps account in minutes. No equipment, no long-term commitments. Now, if you go to stamps.com, do me a favor. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner and type in our offer code TWIT. Because that's when you get the really good deal. You get a $110 bonus offer. That includes that USB scale. It includes $55 in postage, free postage, that you can use over the first few months of your account. You can't use it all at once, but that's still $55. Of course, you get a month's trial of stamps.com. It's a great deal, a no-risk trial offer. Unlike the post office, stamps.com never closes. It's always available. It's right there at your desk. You never have to get up. And you just press a button and the mail carrier comes to you to pick up your postage. Go to stamps.com, click the microphone at the top, and enter the offer code TWIT to try it today. Stamps.com.
Do you commit to a certain amount of time for each ad?
No. I think what we do is we say, well, you're buying a minute ad, but Leo doesn't know how to do a minute ad, so you're okay. Something like that. I don't think I've ever done an ad. On the radio, I have to. You know what it is after years of being tightly constrained to the second on radio and TV, now I just let it all hang out. When I don't even wear makeup. It's freedom for me.
Well, so on the radio, you didn't have to wear makeup.
No, but I liked to. That's the difference between wanting to and having to. I think when I think of Turtles All the Way Down, of those great novels by
Discworld.
Terry Pratchett. And he talks at one point about a creation story.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it also goes back to the actual creation story of the world being held on the back of a giant tortoise, right?
Yeah.
Hindu or Buddhist? Or?
So I first heard it. It's a name that I've been thinking about for years and always wanted to call something called Turtles, and mostly because it's an unusual name. Kind of sticks in your brain.
I love turtles. I'm going to the Galapagos, which is turtles.
Lots of turtles. Yeah. But
there
first...
it is. There's the giant turtle holding the disc world.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Sometimes it's the world is on the back of an elephant, which is then right. Standing on a turtle, and then that's right. Turtles all the way down.
Yeah,
sometimes there's no
elephants.
Elephant.
Yeah.
That's how Terry Pratchett describes it.
Yeah. I first heard it as a Carl Sagan story, but that's, I'm sure, apocryphal. Sometimes Bertrand Russell.
I think it's the Bertrand Russell story. In fact, Stephen Hawking mentions it in Brief History of Time.
Yeah, that's probably where I read it. So yeah. It's...
Bertrand Russell was giving a lecture. He described how the Earth orbits the sun orbits, you know, the stars called our galaxy. At the end of the lecture, I'm quoting Stephen Hawking, a little old lady, we don't say that anymore, Stephen, at the back of the room got up and said, "Sir, what you've told us is rubbish. The world is really a flat plate supported on the back of a giant tortoise." The scientist gave a superior smile before replying, "Well, what's the tortoise standing on?" "You're very clever, young man, very clever. But it's turtles all the way down."
Oh, I get it.
So nice. There you go.
That's nice. It. That's the idea. Is
But how does that have to do with AI? What does it have to do with AI?
Well, it's a platform of platforms. It's the idea is whatever you're building, you're standing on the shoulders of the people who came before you. You're helping the people that come after you.
Nice. So you're one of the turtles.
We're all turtles. That's right. Also, since, you know, elephants stand on turtles, it's a good sequel for me.
Yes, because Evernote was an elephant.
That's right.
Yeah. I get it now.
Yeah.
And then your next startup's going to be what? The sea lion?
It's all going to be turtles. That's it.
Cormorant.
Turtles all the way down. Yeah.
And you already have, it looks like you already have some...
We have 11 products that we're starting with.
Is it an incubator?
Not really. It's more of a studio. The basic idea is we're kind of challenging the idea that if you're a brilliant product person, that what you have to do is make a company first before you can make a product. We're product first. If you're a brilliant writer, like you just write, you don't have to make a writing company.
No.
And if you're a musician, you just play. You don't have to make a music company.
Right.
So why is it that if you have a vision for a product, that you have to make a startup first?
Nice.
Why don't you just make a product first? And so, it's a worldwide
kind of is like
studio.
An incubator.
Well, except we're
not
focusing
on companies. It's like Bill Gross's Ideal Lab a little bit, maybe.
It's like a lot of things.
Yeah.
To me, I'm most inspired by maybe Netflix and Amazon. Like, I'm trying to make Netflix.
Not a bad thing to make.
I'll
take that.
Netflix for AI products. So just the same way that Netflix like attracts the most talented people in film and television, and they make amazing stuff, and they distribute it, and they go, you know, full circle. You just do that worldwide for products.
Among other companies, Loic Lemaire's Leaders is a part of
that. That's right. It's an AI platform for finding speakers. And
I didn't know that Leaders was AI. That's interesting.
All of these are I'd say, practical AI, which is it means that we really focus not on the cutting-edge tech stack, but on the design aspect of it, like on the use cases. We kind of did this with Evernote, right? So, like, Evernote, we started Evernote at, like, we got lucky at just the right time. Right as mobile apps went from being an engineering-driven problem to a product-driven problem. So, like, if you were building mobile apps in 2005, it didn't really matter how good your design was because it was all, like, technology-constrained.
Right.
But if you were building mobile apps in 2008, like, the ones that won were the ones that took it as a product challenge, as a design challenge, not just an engineering challenge.
So we're kind of at that stage.
AI is exactly at that stage, yeah. So if you were building something 3 years ago, it was very much engineering-driven. Like, you needed the lab coat-wearing PhDs at Google.
Right.
Now, as long as you're not trying to do general AI, as long as you're trying to do, like, a specific, beautiful use case, it's gone from being engineering-heavy to being product-heavy, and, like, that's the time for us to step in and do something.
Did Google's TensorFlow change that a little bit? I mean, it's an open-source AI platform.
Yeah.
You can use their TPUs now. They're doing hardware. They announced at Google I.O.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, TensorFlow is a great example.
Commoditized the software and hardware.
Commoditized isn't the right word, but it's definitely a platform. So
made it easy to get to.
All Turtles is it's a meta platform, right? It's basically saying that what you couldn't do before, now you could do because there's a platform for it. So now you can get closer and closer to just building the product first. And that's going to keep happening.
What language do people work in?
English, if they're in the U.S., Japanese in Tokyo.
Really?
Yeah. We're agnostic about the tech stack. So there's all sorts of, there's some of everything. There's a lot of TensorFlow, but there's also just a lot of Java. There's a lot of Python. It's everything. There's a lot of R, which I like to say like a pirate. I think it's better.
Arr. It's the statistics-based language. Arr.
The idea is if you're a brilliant product person, you have a vision, you see a hole in the world in the shape of your product idea, rather than having to make a startup and figure out how to do all of the hard but not interesting company stuff, which I had to do for 20 years. You just make the product first, and then we figure out everything else.
In other words, you're just like me. You're just trying to avoid the things you didn't like about your last job.
Or the last 20, yeah. And, you know, maybe it's an incubator, but really, like, every other incubator focuses, like, what do they incubate?
Right.
They fetishize companies. Like, they want to incubate little companies. Yeah, and what we're saying is, like, the companies are relevant. We just want the world to have amazing products.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a very interesting concept.
Me too.
It starts tomorrow.
Well, we move into the office tomorrow.
Oh, how fun.
We're in Soma, 9th and Harrison. We have the San Francisco location, and then we're opening up Paris and Tokyo by the end of the year.
So you're one of those guys that just can't sit on the beach. You got to go out.
Yeah, I got sunburned real easy.
You got to start another company. You just can't just take it easy.
I don't really see... Yes.
I was talking to a friend of mine, David Friend, who's the guy who started Carbonite. Before that, he did synthesize. I mean, this guy started 100 companies.
Yeah.
And
it's only my fourth, so.
Yeah. He's an older guy. He's older than me. He's probably almost 70. And he kind of retired from Carbonite, and he started another company. He said, I just can't stop.
It beats working.
It must be fun, I guess.
It's fun, but, you know, I'm not optimizing for fun. Like, I really want to do something that has some impact.
Yeah,
and I think this could. And I got an amazing team, so I'm thrilled.
I'm optimized for fun.
Me too. That's why we're here, and Phil is there.
Someday.
Actually, Phil, you're surrounded by people optimized for fun, because I suspect Mike Elgin is also optimized. He's optimized for travel.
If Mike was optimized for fun, he would be wearing a fez, whether or not it's common over there.
I know he owns one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So big thread. This was kind of interesting on Reddit. That got a lot of attention from Apple folks. We'll do one more Apple story. This is Foxconn Insider, which implies perhaps somebody who's deeply, intimately connected with the supply chain in China. Everything reported today, and it is kind of a collection of all the Apple rumors. And I'm not going to go through all of them, but I just...
Who had this?
This was a big thread on Reddit. Oh, got a lot Reddit of attention. Thread. Yeah. And somebody on this page has collated all of the different things that Fox.
Oh, I should have done that.
Yeah, well, you still can.
Yeah, I'm just lifting. Right?
Yeah, just cut and paste is an awesome tool. Or put it in Evernote, and then that way you've sanitized it. But
those links are live. All those links.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So they talked about the next generation iPhone, and a lot of these rumors were heard that it's going to be harder to make than Apple anticipated, which might mean it's a product that doesn't come out this year, but early next year. They want to put the fingerprint sensor under the glass.
That's not going to be this. That's not going to be tomorrow. That's going to be like in the iPhone event.
This is everything. Yeah. Everything. Yeah, 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 all the rumors.
Yeah. You don't believe the transparent iPhone?
I have a bet with Robert Scoble. He says there'll be a transparent iPhone.
Yeah,
I
said, he's been saying that a lot.
I'll buy you dinner.
In Paris.
In right? Paris. A quiche-savoie. If they're actually, no, I think I said Joël Robuchon. If there is a clear one. So he's expecting dinner in Paris. I'm expecting.
What does he get you? Yeah.
I have to learn how to bet because
that's a bad bet.
I never asked for something in return. Am I an idiot?
Well, you just have the pleasure of proving it.
No, you're just supremely confident.
I do this with my wife. Yeah, I just feel like
you're
I'm
just confident.
Win.
Yeah,
I always forget to ask for something in return.
Yeah, don't do that anymore.
What is this? Project Mirror Shades, Apple glasses with microphones, a light sensor, an accelerometer.
This guy. Why would Fox not know about that?
And a fake nose and mustache. that's what I'm hearing.
He's losing my confidence here.
Delayed until at least 2018 or 2019.
So we used to play WWDC Bingo.
This is a good year
that,
for it.
Do that
this
a lot. Is, yeah.
Siri speaker that should be like right in the center.
What I'm hearing. From people who also don't know anything.
Yeah.
We're getting iSonos. I guess what we're talking about.
Or we call it iSonos. Yeah. That's a good.
Yeah. We're getting a new Siri. We might be getting a new Apple Watch. That's been a while.
Oh, yawn.
New hardware.
Can anybody get excited about a new Apple Watch? This is a product that doesn't need a new anything. What would you do different?
I would wear it.
You're not wearing
it. No. I used to, but I gave up on it.
A useful Apple Watch.
In a spec bump for MacBooks. So that's kind of what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
According to Foxconn Insider, might know about a Siri speaker because that would be in production, right?
Yeah.
Last design seen was similar to the trash can Mac Pro, but smaller.
Yeah, that's.
That would be pretty. Three prototypes tested, one with display, one without a camera, not shipping till the end of 2017. We'll use a modified A9 system on a chip. That would make sense. It'd be basically an iOS device.
The Australian guy had the same stuff. It's got a grid like your microphone.
Yeah. Like this?
No, like this.
Well, you got to have holes for the sound to go in. Will we see a new iMac? We're kind of due for an iMac update. I don't know. I think you could slipstream a better chips in there. Maybe.
I haven't heard that.
We do remember that Phil Schiller, when he had his... apology meeting for the five, saying we screwed up on the Mac Pro, did say, but don't worry, pros, there's going to be a new iMac this year that will make pros happy. That's a stretch, because what pros I think probably mostly care about is not form factor, but the ability to swap in more hard drives, swap in newer cards, something like the old cheese grater Mac. If they don't do that, or something that is as upgradable as that, they've missed the boat.
The cheese grater Mac. Right.
That's what we call it. Yeah.
I have not heard that, but I knew exactly what
those
you were talking
were the
about.
Days. Yeah.
Now I'm thinking of cheese.
And I think there's a very good chance that they will miss the boat.
There's 5 years of government cheese unused. It's a surplus.
I grew up on government cheese.
Did you? Remember, under the Carter administration, they were giving away.
I got when I was a kid in our refrigerator. It's good. I thought it was good cheese. We always had like a giant brick of government cheese when I was growing up. It was great.
Apparently, they're still stockpiling.
Is that like American cheese?
It's American cheese that the government would give you.
Cheddar.
Well, it's cheddar.
I guess there's excess dairy. Yeah. Oh, it is. It's processed cheese.
Yeah, I don't think it was anything particularly good. But, yeah, we always had exactly that in the fridge.
This is what government cheese looks like in America.
That's it. Well, they haven't had this in a while.
That's Kraft.
So I grew up. We were on food stamps. We had government assistance to get food, and there was always a giant block of government cheese for years.
How do they do that? Is there like a government cheese counter? No, like is there?
You throw them out of the back of a truck.
Is there somewhere you go to get your government cheese?
Yeah, so I think my grandmother would go and get them, and she would. Yeah, there would like various pantries and like you can go to community centers. There's all sorts of places where this was in the 80s, but yeah, the reason it exists is
because they, as you know, dairy farmers get big price supports and they get and there's a lot of excess milk.
Yeah.
And so they just, the one way to store milk very effectively is to turn it
to give it to poor people as cheese.
Yeah. Cheese.
I grew up storing milk for the U.S. government.
No wonder you're fast. Yeah, no wonder you're fast.
Yeah, no, but I have fond memories of it.
All right. I don't know how we got into that. How we get into government cheese?
That seems random.
We were looking at Apple MacBook Air. Will there be an update on them? I think it'll be discontinued, although I've heard some rumors that it will be updated.
It breaks my heart, the MacBook Air. I mean, it's the last MacBook that I like. Yeah.
You're using it.
Yeah, they started taking my ports away.
I'm a convert on the new ports. I got the new MacBook Pro, the 15-inch. I didn't like it at first. I thought I would really... I wrote like a little sad letter... a breakup letter to MagSafe. I'm like, because I really miss MagSafe.
But Type-C is good.
I've moved on. Yeah, I love USB-C.
Why?
It's great.
The Air is the screen is very low res compared to what's out there now. But I would love to see a refresh that gives you a Retina display. But I don't think you will because that competes so closely with the MacBook.
I'm also glad they got rid of the glowy apple in the back.
What? That's the best thing ever.
Nope. It's the only feature that Apple had for a long time that was completely not like customer centric. It was totally for Apple's benefit. It had nothing to do with the end user benefit.
It was upside down originally. Yeah.
Well, and you can't see it when you're using it.
Right.
So all it's doing is like calling attention to you, taking a little bit of power, and advertising Apple. It was their last non beneficent feature. And now it's gone.
But how many users? Apple laptop so that the world can see that, hey, look at me, I'm using an Apple laptop. I mean, it's kind of a branding thing.
Well, it's
not for the user.
No, of course, but you can't deny how successful it was. You would go to a conference. You would even go to a Windows event, a Microsoft event, and you see all these glowing apples.
But this is like maturity and confidence of the company that they don't need to do that anymore.
Yeah, they're doing what Microsoft's doing with this. They've got a little mirrored logo instead of a shiny. I mean, it's still there. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like they took it off.
So I was glad to see it. And the MagSafe I missed, but USB-C is better.
Oh, you'll be glad to know the MagSafe will return in about 12 to 18 months, according to the insider, the Foxconn insider.
All right. So the best thing about USB-C charging was that it's really fast, but also the fact that you can plug it in on either side, that's a big deal. Like, I didn't realize how often,
it's huge.
I'm at an airport or a hotel, useful. And like being able to plug it in either side, like for me, that's worth losing MagSafe.
Do you like the
MagSafe.
Touch bar?
Provisionally, yes. I like the idea of the touch bar.
Tight,
I use it sometimes, but sometimes sometimes it kind of annoys me because I accidentally hit it and like send an email.
That's what drives me nuts. I get Siri pops up all the time, and then I move Siri over so I just have a blank space, but I'm still hitting it.
Yeah. So
it just drives me crazy. I actually traded down to the touch barless MacBook.
Yeah, I like the idea.
And then I bought a Lenovo laptop. And
I love it in Keynote.
That's what I heard.
I love it in Keynote. So if I'm doing a slide deck, I was just
doing slide decks. It's like a Keynote remote.
Yeah, but like being able to see all the slides and thumbnail and just jump directly to the slide you want, that was actually really cool.
You know what?
Like that up my
Keynote
game.
That's the first use case that I've ever heard that actually makes sense.
Yeah, so I was just raising money for All Turtles, and so I gave a bunch of Keynotes, and being able to just like jump to any slide answering questions. So it always looked like the question that was asked was my next slide. It was amazing.
Cool. Magic.
Magic. Yeah.
That actually, that's the first thing I've heard. They showed, a DJ mixing music on this little touch bar on the event. And I thought, what's wrong with a touch screen? You could do everything and more. And I'm now so that's why I bought a Lenovo. And Lenovo has ports, 3 USB, 2 Type-C. It has an Ethernet port, a weird Ethernet port, but an Ethernet port. It has a full-size
HDMI.
What is
an Ethernet port? Like a token ring port? Like, where do you need an Ethernet port?
Occasionally, there are times you'd like to hardwire.
Why?
Because we have 20 gigabits here, and I would like to at least get one of those gigabits into my machine.
Okay.
It's actually, we're hardwired right now. there are times when hardwire for speed, at least.
Sure.
And you're right. I think most of the time Wi-Fi is just fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
I just like it. It's an OLED screen. It's a touch. I'm really sold on touch. You see me doing this a lot. I mean, it's not. You're right. I'm not all the time. It's basically what it is you have multiple input devices. You have a mouse if you want to use it. You have a touch if you want to use it. On this, I have.
And you don't get hives when you use Windows.
I used to get hives. I've kind of gotten over it. I like Windows 10. Right, it's not so bad. Yeah. I have to look at this just to see what's going on. I guess there's a basketball event happening this week.
Eddie Q. Why doesn't Eddie Q get just fix all the stuff that's broken in his domain rather than telling people to sit down?
What's going on?
So during the Warriors game.
If you go a little. Play that thing. Yeah.
All right. So Rihanna. Famous. You've heard of her. She's a famous
singer. I hadn't, but I listened to her all day. She's really good.
Oh, she's great.
I have heard of her.
It's a long story.
Yes.
She's a Cleveland Cavaliers fan. She's not a Golden State Warriors fan. They were in Oakland for the Golden State Warriors game one of the NBA playoffs. It's a basketball thing. You wouldn't understand.
Sports ball.
Yeah. So
I was born without the gene that makes me care about sports.
I know. Most of the people listening are going, but this is interesting because it involves Eddie Q.
Right.
So I guess LeBron James.
Nobody has ever said.
Right. That's right. We're going to make this interesting, this NBA sportball stuff, but we're going to make it interesting because Eddie Q's involved.
All right.
That shows you that's now you know you're listening to Twit. LeBron has got a free throw. Rihanna jumps up and starts shouting brick, which means miss it.
Right. Oh, really?
I didn't know this. Now we take you. So she's shouting brick. And then, what? Eddie Q? By the way, both of them have multi-$1,000 front row ringside, they call them courtside seats. She's shouting at LeBron. Eddie Q stands up. There he is, saying, sit down. I didn't see that part.
Yeah.
I'm glad they saved it on Twitter.
Well, and then the result is that a million Rihanna fans, you know, she gets 500 million views on her videos on YouTube.
So look at this. If Eddie Q doesn't apologize for his recent misogynistic outburst towards Rihanna, I'm canceling my subscription to Apple Music.
So it went viral, and people did cancel their subscription to Apple Music. And then Eddie Q had to issue
an apology.
Well, he said, I wasn't telling her to sit down. I was telling that other girl to sit down.
He was talking to Marissa.
So that's not actually an apology then.
It's an explanation. But why is he telling anyone to sit down?
Well, let's look at now there's more video, apparently. Oh, Rihanna's throwing some shade. She was not happy about Eddie Q.
Yeah. Something.
Well, let's go back to the GIF, because...
Who is you see Eddie Q
There is another woman in yellow standing up.
Sure looks like Eddie's shouting at Rihanna.
But
right
there is that other woman standing, and maybe her name is Marissa.
I think Eddie should just shut up and sit down and watch the
work.
Game.
He shouldn't be at the game. He should be getting the job done. Where are the original Apple programs to compete with Netflix? What is he doing?
He should be fixing iTunes. He shouldn't be having fun.
I've never felt
more isolated from like the human race than during this story.
I just don't understand any of this. As somebody who's at products
Eddie
and company,
Q all the way down.
Company founder.
I know who Eddie Q is.
Now the chat room is saying, I know sports. I don't know what a Rihanna or an Eddie Q are. We've lost the audience.
It's a funny story, I have to say. Is it really reasonable to say Eddie Q should be working, not enjoying a basketball game? People should have some time off, right? I mean, that seems like a lot.
Yeah.
So we're not really saying, Eddie, shut up and go to bed.
Well, you know, businessmen who stand in the front row of basketball games make me nervous.
Yeah. Well, you saw what happened to Steve Ballmer.
He bought the team.
Yeah. You know, what about, you don't see much of Sir Johnny Ive these days.
Yeah. The whole Apple executive team.
That's really a larger issue.
Yeah. It's where I start to agree with you. They just seem intellectually lazy these days.
We talked about this.
I know. You went on for quite, I listened to that whole show. You spent half of last week's show ranking on Apple. You know,
people are saying
because I'm here.
It should be called Mac what do they call it?
Mac Bash Weekly
or something like that. I'll defend myself. We don't, even if we have topic specific shows like Windows or Mac shows, we're not here to cheerlead for the company.
No.
We're here to talk about the company. And frankly, I'm a Mac fan from years gone by, and I don't think I'm alone at being a little disgruntled with the direction Apple's taking.
Yeah, you think you're a showman.
You think it's too much?
Well, you
look what Mark Newsom is doing.
I won't compare you to the President of the United States, but you do have a way of
invective
of exaggerating your positions to make a point.
To entertain. But I think it's exaggerating to say Eddie Q should sit down, shut up, and get to work and fix iTunes. That's not really your point of view, is it?
It is my point of view. Yeah.
All right. Mark Newsom, who is Johnny Ives.
We don't even want to see the keynotes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm never going to get a seat at a keynote ever again. That's for sure. Actually, I'm prepared to get on my knees and beg to go to the new Apple campus for September.
Yeah, boy.
That will be the one to get, right?
I've already begged, and I haven't gotten near it.
Really?
Since you brought up the Apple campus, Leo, can I make a couple of points about this that have not been made, and I really think they need to be made?
Please do.
The first is that people talk about whether they should, we talk about whether Eddie Q should ever have fun. People are also talking about whether Apple should be building big fancy headquarters. Does this mean the end of Apple? Is this what happens to companies? They build an amazing headquarters and then that's the beginning of the end, et cetera, et cetera. I think it has to be said that the new Apple headquarters are the new icon. They are to tech and Silicon Valley now what the Eiffel Tower is to Paris or Europe. And what, Big Ben is to London, et cetera. It's an iconic. It will always be used from henceforth as an iconic visual to be shorthand for tech and for Silicon Valley, and that's pretty cool. The second thing is, if you look at there's a mystery around parking at Apple Park. They have so much parking. They have way more parking than they could ever possibly need. If you look at the numbers of parking spots that they have, plus Apple's plans to minimize parking. Now, there's an argument that says that the city council requires a certain amount of parking per employees, blah, blah, blah. I don't buy it at all. If you look at the future of self-driving cars, you look at their plans to have shuttle buses and bicycles and all that kind of stuff, I think that campus is actually designed to hold 15 or 16,000 people. Hmm. And they basically built it so that, knowing that they're not going to need all that parking, there's way too much parking and way too low. If they went into the city council and said we're going to build a campus that's going to house 16,000 people, I think everyone would have freaked out.
Oh.
So they said it's going to be 12,000, maybe 13,000. I think this campus is. I think that within 3 or 4 years, there's going to be 15 or 16,000 people at this campus.
So this is designed for big expansion. And to what end, Mike, does Apple expand?
Because they are the world's largest consumer electronics company, and they want to get as many people into that headquarters as possible.
But don't they have enough people to make the products they've already got?
No, they don't. They don't. I mean, they're always going to grow, and they're always going to expand. And, their plan is not to shrink or plateau. Their plan is to keep growing and growing and growing. And they've already, we all know that they're spread out all over Silicon Valley.
This is not their only location by any means. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And they're still going to stick to their current headquarters or their former headquarters. And they just need all the space.
If you're going to expand, you got to have a reason to add those 4,000 employees.
Yeah, cars and stuff. There's a lot of things they could do.
Cars? Where do you expand if you're Apple? Where is the sweet spot? Is it Siri?
Philip said it. It's cars. Self-driving cars are a multi-trillion-dollar opportunity. They're going to become living rooms on wheels, and that's a content consumption experience opportunity. It's the content consumption experience opportunity, and Apple's going to want to be all over it. I really believe in that coming Apple car.
I think if they don't do it,
will they make cars, or will they just make software for cars? What is their?
I think they'll make cars. They will make cars. And software.
That is pretty tough to go up against GM. In fact, there's even conversation that Elon Musk and Tesla, who've done quite well for themselves, are about to enter the buzzsaw because now here come the big three.
No,
they were perfectly happy to let Tesla go for a decade. Yeah. But now it's our turn, kid. Get out of the way.
So, Mike, what were you going to say about that?
Apple has been working with the biggest contract manufacturer for automobiles, which is based in Germany. They've been working for them. In fact, there's like a couple dozen of their employees. I'm trying to find the name now of it. They've been working. That contract manufacturer has had multiple engineers working in Apple buildings for a few years. And so if you think of they're looking at cars the way they look at iPhones. Apple doesn't manufacture iPhones. Foxconn does. And so this company is the Foxconn of automobile manufacturing. And I think that, first of all, I don't think manufacturing a self-driving car, the wheels, the motor, that is not going to be all that difficult. The difficult part is the navigation, and that's where Apple is seriously behind. But why would they be working with this company in Austria? Why would they be, if you look at their...
I'm not denying that they've shown some interest in this.
Yeah.
Although we have heard that they've backed off a little bit, that they've...
Well, they got ahead of their skis or leaned too far over. They started building the car before they'd built the system.
It's space.
It's space?
They're going to space.
Going to space.
This whole thing is going to take off.
Well, that's what
Elon wants a car.
Elon's going to space.
This is a space station. Yeah. Obviously. There's rocket motors underneath.
Yeah, okay, but this is a question.
It's obviously lifting
so
off.
So maybe you know, Philip, this big circular thing here.
Yeah.
Is that an ICBM launching port? What is that?
It's a pool. I've shown this to a lot of architects who are a little bit aghast because it's...
Oh, like, by the way, here's the old barn they saved.
Oh, really?
So this
that, was, is that in the circle?
Yeah. This was originally an HP campus, remember? Right. This barn was... This whole area used to be fruit orchards. That's why the big mall there is called the Prune Yard. It was all... plum trees and cherry trees.
Yeah.
And in 1910, it's not even an old barn. At least Connecticut people wouldn't think so. In 1910, they built this barn. HP preserved it in its campus. So Apple took it, moved it board by board off the premises, and they have now restored it back to the premises now that construction is over. And the barn will survive for no apparent reason. I think they promised
that's going to be the only barn in space when this whole thing
is in orbit around
Jupiter.
That's probably where the next big Apple product is being designed, is inside that barn right there. It's like a TARDIS. It's much larger inside.
You know, the thing that people always say when they look at that round building is, how inefficient. What if you have to meet somebody who's all the way on the other
Steve
side?
Steve wanted. He only wanted two bathrooms. He wanted everybody to walk around a lot so they'd interact.
That makes sense.
I was leading to that story about Pixar.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just stole your story.
That's okay. He had the same idea in Pixar. He wanted the tech people to interact with the cartoon people. And his original thought was, we'll have one bathroom and everybody will have to meet there. He got talked out of that.
I kind of hope they don't make cars.
You hope they don't?
I hope they don't.
I feel like that's a buzzsaw that
they might.
Will have a hard time.
I hope they don't because, I'm bored with cars.
Yeah.
Someone
should
make
these cars.
I'm just bored with cars
in
general.
They'd only have one pedal. You'd have to, it'd either be brake or gas, depending.
You could right-click on the pedal.
everybody is bored with cars. That's the whole point. Self-driving cars are not cars.
No,
they're living rooms. They're places where you go to play virtual reality games and to have a video.
That is the way to get rid of the nausea caused by virtual reality, is to play it while you're in a self-driving car. That makes a lot of sense.
I have to say, nausea caused by
that makes a lot of sense.
The sickest I ever got was playing Doom in a bus.
Oh, jeez.
That you will really mess with your head. I'm just saying. You don't want to know.
Yep. Spaceships.
Let's take a break. Our great panel. What fun. We got Philip Elmer DeWitt came all the way out from Connecticut to be with us for WWDC.
Massachusetts.
I thought you said Connecticut.
The Connecticut River Valley.
Is in Massachusetts?
It goes,
what are they trying to confuse us?
It's the border between Vermont and New Hampshire. It goes through the middle of Massachusetts. It goes through Connecticut.
Okay,
it's called the Connecticut River, but I live in Massachusetts.
Is that Western Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Western Massachusetts.
Yeah, it's nice.
My mom.
The five college area, they call it.
Yeah, well, I know where that is. Yeah. Amherst, Smith,
Mount Holyoke,
UMass, Mount Holyoke. Yeah, all right. Yeah.
Hampshire.
Yeah, I used to hang out there, Hampshire. Also, Phil Libin is here from a brand new company, All Turtles.
at all-turtles.com. Nice. And celebrating Ramadan from his rooftop apartment in Fez, Morocco. God, I love saying that. Gastronomad.net's Mike Elgin. So you've been
400-year-old building.
God, that's so cool. You did something a couple of nights ago that really sounded amazing. You stayed in the desert.
It was amazing. And I saw firsthand the power of the smartphone. We went out to the desert. We went out way to the Sahara part of Morocco.
There he is riding
a bunch of. Yeah. We got these Berber guys. They'll take you out on this camp and you spend the night, Sarah, out in the middle of the desert in this. It's like it's an amazing experience. The guy, the entrepreneur behind this business, did everything with two phones. He had to climb to the highest dune to get connectivity, to confirm reservations, to check Travelocity, not Travelocity, to check, what's the other one? Expedia. To check Airbnb, book this, Expedia, no, not Expedia.
Hotels tonight, and, I don't know.
No.
But he ran his business from the top of the dunes with his smartphone?
Yes. Now, he would come down and...
Oh, I wish we had better connections.
Self-driving camel.
Yeah. Have you ever been on a camel?
Yes.
Me too. It's quite a thing. Fun. Yeah. Yeah.
We rode one in Cairo up to the pyramids. It was really amazing. At night, flaming torches to light our way.
The Asian ones are super more comfortable. Two homes,
are they?
Yeah, you sit in the middle.
This was good. Bactrian or something.
Yeah.
But they do kneel for you to get on, which is kind of cool. They actually, their legs... We're just stalling while Skype gets better. Is it a dromedary or a Bactrian?
I do not know that.
Is it a dromedary?
Yes.
All right.
Dromedary sounds like the place you don't want to get milk from.
That's the Arabian one-humped camel.
That's right. Yes. Okay. Yeah, the one-humped camels are fine, but really it's the two-humped camels. That's the comfort riding.
Yeah. Do you ride on the hump of the one-hump? No, you ride behind the hump or in front of the hump.
They build a little thing on top of the hump.
Yeah, there's a little hump.
The real guy's right in front of the hump, but the tourists are right on top of the hump.
Oh.
They build a special saddle and stuff like that. Okay. And they have a thing to hang on to and so on. If you're a hardcore, legit camel rider, there's a way that you sort of loop one of your legs around and you kind of perch yourself on the top. It's harder to do. You lose a lot of tourists that way. So they build this like saddle you can't pull out.
I've been on the saddle. But I have to say the ride is interesting. The gait is unusual. Yeah. You have to kind of...
Yeah. And I have to say that the coolest thing was the stars in the desert at night.
Oh, I bet.
Was something mind-blowing. We saw dozens of shooting stars. The Milky Way was like, it was almost like it was painted on the sky. It was really, I've never seen stars like that. It was really, really a great experience.
Did they have a tent? Did you stay in a tent or?
So they have a camp set up with about 8 tents, I think, something like that. And we were the only guests. So there were 4 Berber hosts, and Amira and I were the only guests. They made us an incredible tagine, the best tagine we've ever
loved tagine.
Had. With bread and fruits kind of stuff. And then they played some music, and we all sang songs and played the drums and all that kind of stuff. It was really cool. And then we had a tent, but we asked them to set up a bed outside, so we just slept under the stars. And they all slept under the stars. They just put a rug on the sand. And it was amazing. We got up before the sun came up. We watched the sunrise. And Sarah, we got back on the camels and rode back. It's like an hour ride.
Our show tonight brought to you by Carbonite Online. Back, I was just talking about Carbonite and David Friend. Carbonite. They're rocking, and I didn't realize, but I was talking to David the other day. They use some pretty interesting proprietary technology to write to the disks. They've really optimized it. So what is it? It's cloud backup, but it's cloud backup done right. It's automatic. It's continuous. It's low cost, flat fee. They've got plans for home. It starts at $59.99 a year, less than $5 a month for everything on a PC or a Mac. But then... when you go to the business side, man, the office plans include servers. They have a high availability backup.
so you don't have any time wasted getting back online. They have hardware devices. They have the E-Vault that lets you back up locally and then back up to Carbonite. There's the E-Vault. It is a solution for every business. And I'll tell you, it solves the biggest problem in business because you're reliant on data. And if your data isn't safe, your business isn't safe. And all you have to do is look at the WannaCry people, who just makes you want to cry, who've lost everything, businesses, hospitals, 300,000 people bit. Now, if you use Carbonite, you don't have to worry about ransomware. In fact, go to the Carbonite site, carbonite.com, click the Office tab up at the top, and look at their resource pages. They've got a lot of white papers on ransomware mitigation, protecting yourself against ransomware, protecting yourself against WannaCry specifically. And it all involves having a good backup. Every security expert says backup is kind of one of the keys to keeping your system safe. Carbonite Cloud Backup. I want you to check it out. You can try it free, which is nice. Pick the plan that's right for you. Go to carbonite.com. No credit card needed, but do me a favor. There is an offer code when you sign up for the free trial. Use our name, Twit, would you? Because then they'll know you heard it here, but also you'll get 2 free bonus months if you decide to buy. You got to back it up if you want to get it back. It's all the more important these days. Carbonite.com. Don't forget to use the offer code.
Twit. I think Carbonite's got is the best named backup service.
Yeah, because it's because of the Star Wars.
Yeah, well, Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
The greatest movie of all time.
That was the worst movie of all time. You thought the second...
I'm out.
Wait a minute. No, seriously. You thought that was the best Star Wars movie?
It's not that I thought that. It's empirically true. This is established science.
Oh, no. I was thinking the one with Jar Jar. That's not the Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
That's episode one.
That, I don't know what that is.
That was terrible. Yeah. I'm sorry. You're talking about episode 5.
Yes.
Okay, I apologize. Right. Yeah, The Empire Strikes Back. No, that was a good one.
That was a great
one. That's the one where Luke sleeps in a Tauntaun. And
yes.
And they trip up those big walker things.
Yeah, yeah. That's the one with the best line ever, which is,
Hoth.
I thought they smelled bad. On the outside.
nice beat there. That's very well done. Yeah. Very time. Well done.
Yeah.
Here, I thought hell froze over this week. It was a shock. Google announced, confirmed, they're going to put ad blockers in Chrome.
And that's good? Yeah.
Well, it's good for Google. I realized suddenly, but the one ads that Google's ad blocker won't block is Google's ads.
It'll block annoying ads.
Annoying ads. And guess what? None of Google's ads are annoying.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah. How do they decide what's annoying?
Well, there actually is a group.
If they're not Google's ads.
Yeah, they're not. That's annoying. It's annoying annoying to Google. There's a group called the Coalition for Better Ads. In the great tradition of naming these industry, self-interest Coalition groups with a name that makes it feel like it's good for America.
CABA,
whose members include the Interactive Advertising Bureau, the Association of National Advertisers, the Washington Post, Thomson Reuters, Facebook, Unilever, Procter & Gamble, and, surprise.
Procter & Gamble, yeah.
Google. Mm,
they don't
that is
much.
A party.
But, admittedly, there is a problem, right? I mean, ads have gotten way out of control because you know what? Here's the real problem, Google, and this is, they'll never admit, is that banner ads don't work. You look at a banner ad,
yeah,
and you don't see it because we've learned how to tune it out. So what happened? They had to make them more intrusive. They had to punch the monkey for a while.
Yeah.
And then they had to do takeovers. It's gotten to the point you can't read a page until you click, and they move the close box to different places. I mean, it's just gotten incredibly annoying.
I honestly don't understand the point. Like, unless Leo Laporte is reading your ad, I don't know why people even bother paying for
them. Why even bother?
Yeah.
I'm not against ads. In fact, Mike Elgin, you gave me the best example of why ad-supported media and what we do is good because it's democratizing. It means you don't have to have
absolutely
you don't have to have money to hear content or to read content. I don't have anything
absolutely
against ads.
I do.
And let me ask you guys this. There's a behavior that I've noticed in myself where I have an ad blocker, and any publication that pops up a thing and says, you know, you have your ad blocker on, I just disable it for that site, just automatically. And it works out fine, I guess, so
I just
far.
Leave the publication and never come back.
You never come back. You hate ads so much that you will. But you understand. And Philip, you run a site that is ad supported.
No, it's ad free. That's the point.
Well, how do you? Because you have subscribers.
Right. I left Fortune because it was becoming more and more intrusive. You couldn't read the stuff for the ad.
I think it is possible to have really good ads. It's possible you occasionally see
them.
You're
just saying that because I'm sitting next to you.
No, I think it's true. But most of the time, it's a pretty bad experience. And certainly most of the time on the internet, it's a pretty bad experience. But yeah. It does have the potential for getting better. But as we go more and more, I mean, Mike, you were saying this about wearables, right? Soon we'll just be wearing the tech on our glasses. Like, okay, look, if I'm browsing the internet on a giant monitor on my desktop, like Leo's doing here, okay, I can allocate like...
Then it's not so bad.
I can allocate a few pixels to the ad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If I'm looking at it on my phone...
It's a nightmare.
How many pixels on my phone am I willing to allocate to an ad? Not very many.
Well, there's also the issue of...
Once it's in my glasses, like how much of my retina am I giving up to an ad?
But, yeah.
Like very quickly approaching zero.
The thing is that the big mystery, though, is that we always talk about all the personal data that these companies take, Facebook, Google, et cetera. They're harvesting everything. They're finding out everything. They're following us to the store. They know they're recognizing our faces. And they still can't give us relevant ads. Like, why is that? Like, if you talk about advertising in your glasses,
right.
If it was perfectly relevant, it was so good that it didn't even feel like an ad. It just felt like good advice.
Well, it won't be ads. It'll be things like you're walking by the Gap and something says, oh, hey, you know what? You need new pants, and you want a new pants, and
what's
there's a great deal
pants?
On pants.
You were clearly looking at my pants when you said that. I just got these pants. These are like the first new pants I've owned in years.
Isn't that a
skinny
nightmare?
Jeans. Come on.
You're walking down the street, and ads are coming in.
You guys have just put your finger on the fundamental problem. This is the Google paradox, they call it. If they really were, like, super useful, they wouldn't be ads. Like, let's just say Google knew... At any given time, what the five most useful things for me to know right now are, like the five most delightful, useful things for me right now, none of those would be things that somebody would pay for to put in front of me. Those are all things that I would pay to see. Mm. So they're fun. Like
yes.
The better ad targeting gets, the more they become not ads.
Yeah.
Like at some point, this idea that someone's going to pay money to interrupt your attention stream is going to be completely in conflict with where the technology is going of actually figuring out what's most important and delightful and useful to you. So ads are of that type are totally not sustainable over the next decade or something.
Okay.
But
look
we'll
what
see
Amazon
how long that takes.
Doing with the Amazon Echo. Look, this is absolutely brilliant. You actually point their camera at yourself and you say, Amazon, do these pants make my ass look fat? And Amazon says, yes, but these don't.
Maybe the problem is terminology.
But that's not an ad.
Right.
So because then they're actually going to sell you the pants that make your ass don't.
Exactly.
But maybe they're selling it from a third party. I mean, maybe Amazon.
No.
A lot of what's on Amazon is from a third party, I have to tell you.
But look, if Amazon.
Does that make it an ad? It's a third party now?
So here's the thing. If Amazon gets money, no matter what you buy, they're incented to show you genuinely the best things. Because they just want you to like buy more.
They want you to be happy.
Yeah, they want you to be happy and you'll make money.
That's not what advertising is.
Like advertising doesn't want you to buy the best thing for you. It wants you to buy the thing that somebody has paid to put in front of you because it's not the best thing.
So if you were the best thing, you wouldn't need an ad.
Right. You would just sell it. So companies that actually control
True, but okay. I'll accept that.
It's mostly true. I think
there are a lot of products that you never heard of that may be the best thing.
That's true.
But then you would hear about it through a recommendation, not through a paid placement.
Would. I don't know. I discover stuff through ads.
Right, because the targeting
isn't
good enough.
Clearly, what advertising was, especially on television, if you look at Mad Men, that's what the whole show was about.
Yeah, make you smoke even though you didn't want
to. They're manufacturing your desire for that product, whereas with all the data collection, they should be able to find out what you actually want, not tell you what you want.
So this idea that Google Chrome is going to start blocking annoying ads, what is this coming from? I mean, this is a company that sells ads. Is this a rear guard action because they're afraid you're going to put a real ad blocker on and block all ads?
What they're doing, it's actually a great idea because essentially – They brought down the price. You know, Google is one of the companies that brought down the price of ads so low, and that's one of the reasons ads are so crappy. They can simultaneously create more scarcity by taking people out of can't see the ad. You know, they'll have all these people blocking ads by default, and that makes advertising and reaching the remaining people, I guess, more valuable. Doesn't it? I mean, it's like, you know, it's a way for them to get monetization, whether you're looking at ads or whether you're not looking at ads.
I have a fantastic idea for an ad startup. I'm going to pitch it to you guys.
Free?
It's fantastic / terrible. This is like a half serious startup idea that I have for ads. We're going to scrape your email to find out like what you bought from Amazon. And then we're going to buy, as you're browsing, we're going to buy ads so you see ads for the stuff you already own. So imagine like being on the internet. And all you're seeing is ads for things you already own.
That's Amazon recommendations.
No, no, no. It's all the stuff you already have. You're only seeing ads for the stuff you already have.
That's how it works now.
It is. That's how bad ad recommendations are. What's the benefit?
It's there to make you want the things you have.
Oh.
It's a confidence builder.
It's there to make you want the things you have. It's the stoic ideal.
It's to affirm that you made the right decision.
It's the stoic ideal. Like the secret of happiness is wanting what you have.
Right. And who pays for this?
That's why it's not a best idea.
Well, but if you slipped in, you show them 9 things that they already have, then the 10th
one thing they don't have.
No. See, you're ruining the purity of this. This is like the way to make
money.
All right. Maybe you'll like this. This is Google. Remember, Google had this thing I thought it was very good called Contributor. You'd put some money in, and then they would divvy it out to various Google ad sites. Mm-hmm. And instead of the Google ad, you'd get kittens or whatever you chose to see instead. And I thought that was a good thing. They discontinued it, and this is their new Google Contributor. You go to a website. They've got, I guess, only 4 so far, Grub Street, WWG, Comic Book, and Popular Mechanics. And
That brings back memories.
The website says, hey, I see you're running an ad blocker. Would you like to buy a Google Contributor Pass that will remove ads from your site?
And you say, no, I will not.
It's
a good idea if they can actually scale it. If they can scale it, which they probably can't.
Well, what it does is it does respond to both of you guys who say, I don't want any ads at all. The problem is there are plenty of products nobody's going to pay for. I mean, look what happens with paywalls on a lot of publications, right? Fortune's not going to put a paywall up because they look at the Wall Street Journal or whoever.
They threatened to put a paywall up.
Yeah, and I think they probably thought about it and realized that's not going to make any money. It's a bad idea. It's user hostile.
But ads are different from product referrals, right?
That's what I do. I feel like when we do an ad, it's a product referral.
Yeah, well,
it's a word of mouth recommendation for a product.
I think that's right, and I think if you had,
so we're very picky. We pick the clients, the sponsors, products we use.
And you are picky.
I turn down ads all the time. You have to, because I consider it an introduction.
Yeah,
I mean that's kind of my rationalization. I mean, I want to be ad supported media, and my rationale is, well, okay, if I'm going to do this, I only want to recommend products I believe.
But it's got to be high quality, the way that you do it is aligned with the interests of the listener, which is you're trying to make it high quality and entertaining and a net benefit to someone's quality of life, because it wouldn't work if it wasn't.
Right, and also
kind of ads are good.
Gives us a chance to pee.
And it's thereby being net positive to the quality of life.
That is the value of ads in general. Right. It gives you a chance to go to the kitchen, get a snack, and not miss much of the show. Right. The funny thing is, I don't think people, for the most part, anymore are watching live broadcasts. They're watching on demand, even if they're watching
sports ball.
Sports is about it. So, House of Cards, that's a bad example because it's not ad-supported. But, Fargo, great show. But I'm not watching it live because I want to skip the ads.
Well,
right?
And sometimes I'll watch something on demand that has disabled the ad
it
skipping.
It drives you crazy.
I never watch it again.
Right.
I can't remember. There isn't much that makes me angrier than that.
Yeah. But that's a problem because those programs are free programs that are paid for by the ads.
Them having failed out to figure out a business problem is not my problem. It's their problem.
Yeah, no, I understand your point of view. I just, it's scary for me.
Somebody sold me a button.
By the way, and podcasts are exactly on demand. I mean, what we do is a completely on-demand product. So presumably people could skip our ads just as easily as they could skip a DVR.
Which aligns the incentives to actually make them good and entertaining and informative so that most people don't skip them.
Exactly. Right. Or we do a tease at one end and then people stay through the ad to the other end,
You have the live blog, the live chat.
Well, we have live, but it's a tiny fraction of the total audience that watches live and is in the chat. That's less than 10% of the audience. And we don't know how to. We can't even monetize it.
Right.
So even though those people are compelled to watch the ads, we actually can't make any money off of them. Well, only the people who could skip the ad, and we just hope that they don't skip the ad.
One of the things that we need in podcasting is to know a lot more information about
whether people are skipping, what parts where, when they stop listening to a podcast.
I really don't want to know that. I really don't want to know that.
Well, no, I think you do because if people, I mean, I monitor my own behavior, and there are some podcasts I listen to, and I love the podcast, but I skip the ads because they suck at reading them. On Twitch shows, I don't skip the ads. I listen to them because it's always
you
different.
You probably just zone out.
I'm curious to hear the new information. They it's mixed up, and there's a lot more energy put into it. It's a lot of podcasts. They just sort of you can tell the people doing the podcast are being dragged kicking and screaming into doing the ad. They don't really want to do it.
Yeah.
Because they don't own the company and so on. And so it's like it would be fantastic to know which, when people are leaving, when are they skipping. I think podcasters really need to know that stuff. I think it would improve podcasts a lot. The other problem I have with a lot of podcasts out there is that like people start a podcast and it's like 20 minutes of like blah, 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 and they don't get to the point. It's like, I don't have that kind of time. I would like to be able to tell them, look, get to the content, you know what I mean? Yeah. I don't want 25 minutes of like hearing about your sandwich or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because when I first started doing this, that was a really high priority value for us, was not to waste listeners' times. And I think over time I've kind of stopped doing that. I just waste your time like crazy.
Yeah.
So I apologize.
It happens.
For me, I'm getting a little sloppy because I just like talking with, every one of these shows is with friends. And often that I don't see very often. So I'm catching up, but I probably shouldn't waste our audience's time with catching up. I should get right to the
See, but that isn't, I don't think that is like, I like that. What bothers me is when they don't have new guests, it's the same two people.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
that
they're
is boring.
Up.
Yeah.
I don't care about your relationship so much as the content. No. And it's fine. Five minutes is fine. 20
that's,
minutes.
That's a broadcaster value, which is the attention that you're given by your audience is the most valuable thing. And so you've got to honor that.
Plus, Mike, it sounds like you just resent sandwiches.
Hey,
nobody likes sandwiches better than I do.
I'm a big sandwich fan. What's wrong with sandwiches? There's nothing better.
Nothing.
I started to do some podcasts, and I'm just not as loose as you are. So I feel like I'm really old-fashioned about it. I, like, write my questions down ahead of time. Yeah. I try to...
You're formal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, maybe,
I'm just lazy. It's not that I'm loose. I'm just lazy. It's too much work.
You've done it long enough that you...
You know how long I've been doing this? You don't even want to know.
I do want to know.
40 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Not podcasts. But I don't even think podcasts are any different than radio. I've always done this.
How much of that was radio?
Well, podcasting only really started in 2004, so 27 years.
I can't do the math.
You know, when we
Leo, you're in the perfect position to answer what is to me the biggest question of all. Why isn't everything a podcast? Like, why isn't every show, why does radio still exist?
Yeah, there's a lot.
Why does television still exist?
Because radio still exists.
The only reason radio still exists is the car. Frankly, the car. There's very little radio listening outside the automobile, and that is a very short term thing. Already, music radio is suffering because. I'll tell you why it's not dead. Is there is a value to having somebody to keep you company in your car that is alive and right now as opposed to pre-recorded. Right. And I think that that is something genuine. I mean, isn't it nice to watch live TV or listen to live radio and know that that person's doing this right now?
Yeah, I mean...
It is. Yeah, that's a good point.
It's companionship. That was always the reason for radio, is companionship.
I think NPR and BBC... have a model for radio that works.
Loathe it. It's so
really?
Pompous. It's so formalized.
Oh, see, where I live, I ask people, where do you get your news? And they're all listening to NPR all day long.
I was listening to an interview I was very interested in. And I love Terry Gross. This is not to knock her. But it's more to knock the format, the structure. Uh-huh. She was interviewing the son of George Martin, the Beatles producer.
Right, because of the 50th anniversary.
50th anniversary. I was very interested. I just bought it. I was really excited. She reintroduced him in 25 minutes five times. And not just like, I'm talking to Glynis Johns, who's
It's like a long, she's clearly reading, right. And this is Formatics, probably dictated by NPR, I doubt. Well, maybe Terry does do that. But
she's
it
pretty
pissed
fashioned.
Me off because I was interested in her subject, and I wanted to hear him talk. I didn't want to hear her reintroduce him. And it makes no sense on a podcast. It only makes sense on broadcast because it's only on broadcast that somebody might show up.
Right.
If you're listening to a podcast, I don't need to I reinterest you guys more because it's a chance to plug you and to acknowledge you and thank you for being here. But if you've tuned in this podcast, you know by now who Phil Liven is.
If you've stuck with this podcast this long, you've figured it out.
By now, you know who these people are. And there's that strange guy cut from Riyadh or wherever. I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows?
Up on the rooftops singing his praises. Let's take a break because I haven't done enough ads yet. But we will have more with Mike Elgin. I'm doing the reintroduce. I don't really need to, do I? I think it's more a courtesy to you guys. Like, just to acknowledge that you're here and on the show with us, and I'm grateful, right?
You know, we did a
podcast. It's nice to remind people.
Yeah.
We did a podcast at Evernote, which was a lot of fun. Did it for a few years. And our entire stated goal was we want our podcast to be more popular than Leo Laporte's least popular podcast.
That wouldn't be hard. I have some very unpopular podcasts.
We made it. We made it like once or twice, like on the iTunes.
How do you even know what my iTunes,
yeah.
That's not real, though, because that's Billboard style. That's a weighted chart based on number of subscriptions.
We were just going, we just said we want our podcast to be more popular than Leo's least popular podcast on iTunes. And we made it once or twice.
Congratulations.
I forget what it was.
Well done.
It was like,
bravo.
Yeah.
No, but you understand
it's
that
Palm
those,
Pilot
that odd time, that's just like.
He had like 50 of them.
That's subscriptions this week.
I choose not to understand any of that.
In fact, my podcasts do very poorly now because everybody who wanted to subscribe to subscribe.
Did
so I
a
get
long time ago.
Fewer new subscriptions than many podcasts that have far fewer listeners.
Be that as it may.
Does that make sense?
Be that as it may, my best was better than your worst.
What was it?
Your worst podcast?
Yeah.
It's like This Week in Fava Beans or something. I don't know.
Yeah, we had to stop doing that one. It had a terrible
accent. What is the measure for? Is there something better than iTunes to measure? Do you have numbers?
We know because we have to measure numbers. The advertisers want to know, and that's how we sell
and
it.
And what do you use to measure them?
We have been going through a company called PodTrack, which is a podcast advertising agency that offers free metrics. But we actually also do our own numbers. We at first thought, you know, it's traditional in broadcast media that no one would, if I were a radio station and I said, well, I could tell you how many listeners, you wouldn't trust me.
Right.
So there's Arbitron and Nielsen. There's a third party independent kind of certified measure, just like for magazines, the advertising ABC, right?
Yep.
The Circulation Bureau. That's an independent metric. But it turns out in podcasts, they do trust podcasters. Most podcasters just say a number, and that's that.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah, just make it up.
Okay.
In fact, I know people are making it up because I look at some of the numbers people quote, and I go, that's impossible. There's no way they have those kinds of numbers. So you could say that that's a failing of podcasting, that there isn't this kind of independent metric. I like it. But we don't lie. We intentionally underestimate. Because we don't want to get in a situation where we're inflating numbers.
But see, I believe, based on my own listenership and viewership, that you are better than anyone else at keeping the audience listening and watching. And that's why I think you benefit enormously from metrics about how much they listen all the way through, or if they listen halfway through, or whatever. That kind of thing. If that were measured and were
Maybe.
Made public.
There's a cautionary tale. For a long time, the way radio was rated was you would get a diary. Maybe some of you have received a diary that said, write down your radio listening, and at the end of the week, mail it in. And, of course, nobody does. It's one of the reasons I think Rush Limbaugh did so well is that people were fanatics about Rush Limbaugh, even if they didn't. You kind of look like Rush Limbaugh, by the way.
I've
never
that's the worst one
put
I've
that
ever
together.
Got.
But sorry, Philip. So shows that had like devoted followings would do much better because nobody ever recorded their actual numbers. They, at the end of the week, come and go, oh, crap, I got to mail this back. I want my $5. And they just write Rush Limbaugh, right across the board. And so shows with devoted fans would do very well. Then Arbitron, the company that does this, invented the people meter. Remember, Nielsen does this. They have a box in your house that would measure. Well, they came up with
the company is actually called Arbitron.
There's Arbitron and Nielsen. Arbitron is the one that does most of the radio stuff.
It's suspicious that a company that's trying to give you good stats is called Arbitron.
Because it's kind of arbitrary.
Yeah, that is an odd choice of name. It's not what I would have gone with.
So Arbitron figured out a way to actual metrics.
It could have been like Precisiontron.
And the sad thing that happened, across the board, stations had far fewer listeners than they ever saw from the diaries. It was, this happened about 10 years ago, a massive depression in audience ratings. And surprisingly, like, for instance, in Los Angeles, all of a sudden the number one station is a Spanish language station.
Mm.
Wonder why.
That makes sense.
When they start measuring it accurately, and maybe I'm the Spanish language station in this story, Mike. You know, maybe I would benefit from accurate measurement, but maybe not. So let's not, okay?
You're the univision of tech.
Yeah, it drives L.A. radio stations crazy that you'll often hear them say, we're the number one English-speaking station in the market. It drives them nuts. But, you know, the truth can be painful. Truth hurts sometimes. Phil Libman here. It's great to have you from allturtles.com with a dash in the middle from Morocco, from Fez. And I apologize for the audio quality, but I'm so glad to have you on, Mike. It's worth it. Mike Elgin, gastronomad.net.
So glad to be here.
Yeah. And Philip Elmer DeWitt is making his first in-studio appearance, which is so nice. Yeah. PED30.com.
So happy to be here.
Yeah. I'm glad you called and said I'm going to be here for WWDC. Yeah. Like, this is fantastic. You don't really look like Rush Limbaugh.
Good.
Just like Rush Limbaugh. We had a great week. We have a lot of fun stuff to show you as we put together this little highlight reel from the week gone by on This Week in Tactical.
Previously on Twit.
Performing evasive maneuvers.
I have phaser range at full capacity. Right. I don't know
so
if
much
that
fun.
Means anything.
I'm looking forward to this.
We saved the Suribachi.
Obviously. Security Now.
The attack of the subtitles. Researchers at Checkpoint have discovered a new attack vector. By crafting malicious subtitle files, attackers can take complete control over any type of device via vulnerabilities found in many popular streaming platforms.
The new screensavers.
That robot's name is Butler, and there are actually a handful of these robots deployed in hotels across the country. It's a relay robot built by a company called Savio here in Silicon Valley. All right.
Twit, now with half the calories.
Hey, Colleen, I was just thinking, I got these Death Star plans. Could you just jam them in there, wedge them in there? There it is. Help me. It doesn't... Jam it. Push it. There. Yeah. Jason Howell, what's coming up this week?
Coming up this week, on Monday, June 5th, Apple's Tim Cook will take the stage at the Worldwide Developers Conference to showcase not only its big developer initiatives, as expected, but also perhaps some new hardware, including its much-rumored Siri speaker that would compete with the Amazon Echo and Google Home. On Tuesday, June 6th, Google is expanding its Waze carpool service from the Bay Area and limited areas surrounding out to the entire state of California, and who knows? Maybe someday you'll be carpooling with Waze in your neighborhood sometime down the line. On Thursday, June 8th, Yahoo shareholders placed their vote on whether to sell Yahoo's internet business to Verizon for $4.48 billion. No surprise at this point. A yes vote is expected. And if that happens, it would mark the end of Marissa Mayer's time as CEO of the company. And that's just a look at a few things that we'll be tracking in the coming week. Join myself and Megan Maroney on Tech News Today every weekday at 4 p.m. Pacific. 7 p.m. Eastern here on twit.tv.
Thank you, Jason Howell. Marissa made some good money for her brief tenure.
$50 million a year or something like that.
That's nice work if you can get it.
I don't
it doesn't put her in the top 200.
I know, that's true, though. Isn't that silly? Isn't that sad? I am going on vacation tomorrow. We've got great people filling in for me. Next week, Jason Calacanis will be hosting. Who's hosting the following week? Is it Jason Snell? Snell is next week. Calacanis. We decided to have only people named Jason hosting the show for the next couple of weeks. So Jason Snell next week, Jason Calacanis the week after. The thing I'm going to miss, my mattress, of all things. I'm looking forward to
it. You're not taking it with you?
I'm not taking my... I could, though.
Startup idea.
Hmm. I could have a Casper sent to the hotel in Lima.
Nice segue. And
the Casper mattress is the best mattress in the world. They're an online retailer. Premium mattresses made in the U.S. And because they're made in the U.S. and sold directly to you, there's no markup, no department. You know, department stores double the price of everything. No mattress store markup. So you're going to get a great mattress for a fraction of the cost. Obsessively engineered. It's made of supported memory foams. It's hard to describe this, and this is why I want you to try the mattress, because it's got sink. You're comfortable. It's not hard, but it's firm. How could something? I don't know. You just have to try this. It sinks a little, I guess, and it's breathable. So as summertime's coming, it's going to get hot. You want a mattress that helps you sleep cool, because we know you'll sleep better if you're cool at night. Not too hot, not too cold, just right. Long lasting too. Great comfort, great support. You buy it online, and here's the most important thing. It's completely risk-free. We're not talking about going to a mattress store and lying in broad daylight with your shoes on a mattress while the salesperson gives you the stink eye. We're talking about taking the mattress home, and actually they ship in a very surprisingly compact box. Look, and you open it up, it comes out, and it's wrapped in Tyvek. They give you a little cutter. It goes, and then suddenly this beautiful mattress. It doesn't smell like rubber or anything. It smells fresh and delicious. And it's, well, you might worry, you know, it's been in the box.
I'd eat it.
And then you got 100 nights. You sleep on it for 100. Anytime in the first 100 nights, if you're tired of this, you say this mattress is not right for me, they come and get it and take it away, refund you every penny. It costs you nothing. There's no risk. You've got to try it. Free shipping, free returns in the U.S. and Canada.
But not Machu Picchu.
Unfortunately, not Machu Picchu or the Galapagos. I'm just going to have to suffer. But, you know, then traveling's great, because when you get home, it makes you appreciate. So you get in your own bed with my Casper mattress, my Boll & Branch sheets, and I go, oh, I'm home. I feel so great. Save an additional $50 on your mattress if you go to Casper.com/twit and use the promo code TWIT. That way they know you heard it on the show. Casper.com/twit. Promo code TWIT. You win and we win, because you get $50 off. Terms and conditions apply. Thank you, Casper.
Which came first, Casper the Friendly Ghost? Or
the mattress came second. Casper the Ghost is older. But yeah. Casper Ghost spells it A-R, right? C-A-S-P-A-R? Caspar? Or is it Casper?
I don't know.
Or Kaspersky?
Spelled the same, it says here.
Supportive memory foam, much better than judgmental memory foam. Much more relaxing.
Thank you for holding that in thought until
I know.
Until we, after the,
it was almost unbearable.
WWDC picture on your website. Where
you
is
go
it?
Go to the very top.
Okay. This is the building.
Yeah, and then hit read more.
What is wrong with them? What is that? This is the McHenry Convention Center, Zen Convention Center. I took Est there in 1978.
Oh, I took it in Manhattan.
That was good, wasn't it?
It was good for a couple of years.
Yeah. It got me to where I am today, but that's where I took it.
Yeah, doesn't it look like it broke out? Looked like as a teenager.
What are those things?
Those little people shot from the top.
Oh, it's people shot from the top.
But no one really knows what it's about. Apparently, they're centered around a dot.
Do you think they're going to release an Apple drone?
No, it's going to be a jetpack. This guy's clearly in a jetpack. Look at him.
I think it's an AI reference.
That is clearly a jetpack.
Is this guy in a jetpack?
It's the Apple jetpack.
What is this? And who are these people? He's holding. Is he flying?
Apparently they lifted this idea from some art show.
This is okay. Up close, you get it, but from a distance, you're right. It's not obvious what that is. It looks kind of.
And they covered the I don't know what the light rail is called in San Jose, but the whole station's covered with it.
This is the view from the Apple jetpack. We're finally going to get. We were promised jetpacks. Apple's
when we get our jetpack
tomorrow.
Yeah, so all along down here is and they've closed the street off to make San Jose safe for developers.
Wow. It's nice to have that kind of money, right?
Yeah.
I think this means they're going to do a drone. I'm going to be the first to say it. Oh, really? Look, there's a guy in a wheelchair. You can tell from the top.
Oh.
Yeah, that's inclusive, right?
All right.
But you can't tell what race any of these people are.
Yeah. So there's nothing here that says Siri speaker.
No, you're right. Must be a false rumor.
All right. It does sort of say AI, though.
What time is it in Fez? Always wanted to say that.
It is 11 minutes after midnight.
So is it calming down?
No, should be starting
not
up.
At all.
Is the kids, the sugar, is it wearing off the kids? They're having more, a little more baklava, and they're going to go all night.
Yeah, they are.
Wow. Uber has decided to fire Anthony Lewandowski. This was a controversial hire. Lewandowski worked at Google on Waymo, the Google self-driving car. He then went to Otto, which was his own startup, a self-driving truck. Uber bought Otto and hired Lewandowski and then got sued because, strangely enough, the LiDAR on the new Uber self-driving cars and the Otto looks suspiciously like the invented at Waymo LiDAR that cost one-tenth what LiDAR normally costs. The courts told Lewandowski that he had to turn over information that he had evidence. He asserted his Fifth Amendment right to avoid self-incrimination.
Ooh. Uber, a lot of people doing that these days.
Yeah, that seems popular. I got to remember that. I have declined to testify on the grounds that I might incriminate myself. I would like to plead the Fifth.
The beautiful thing about the Fifth is that you can't actually imply guilt from it. So,
but you do, obviously.
You shouldn't, or else it kind of makes the whole Constitution pointless.
Yeah, but you do. I mean, I know the jury and the judge don't, but everybody else goes, he did it.
That's what Sessions said before he was asked to testify.
He did it. Anyway, Uber had been pressuring him to hand the materials over to cooperate. He missed an internal deadline to do so. They fired him.
Yeah.
So he's gone.
$700 million they paid for that company. Oh, wow.
So well, that puts the Marissa Meyer thing in perspective.
Yeah.
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 Let's see. Waymo is also looking at trucking. So is Elon, right? Elon says he wants to do a truck.
Well, those are the guys who are going to be out of work. The truckers.
Yeah. Truckers first.
Mm, I'm not sure.
Hey, Leo, did you see Logan, the movie Logan?
I did.
They did such a great job depicting the future of self-driving trucks. I thought that was perfect. It's exactly what's coming.
I must have fallen asleep in that part. What happened?
Also, the future of adamantium claws.
Well, obviously, that's going to happen. But they perfectly depicted a world where all the trucks are self-driving. They're all in a row. They're sort of responding to accidents and things like that. It was really well done. It looked so believable, and I think trucking is going to be one of the first implementations of self-driving vehicles. Makes so much sense. Already, truck drivers are pushed to the limit. They're exhausted. They tend to be often dangerous drivers and so on, like because they have such big vehicles
and they're on speed. Yeah.
But if anybody is still going to see the movie Logan, check out the detail with which they depict this world of self-driving trucks. It's
so
really
funny. We just saw the movie. I don't remember that.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
The chat room thinks you've confused Logan with Mad Max.
It's a little short clip in there.
It's where the horses get loose.
Oh, when the horses get loose. Yeah. Okay, I don't remember. You know, I didn't really like it. I was just waiting for that one scene where the little girl just whips up on all the bad guys. And then after that, I just kind of went back to my game. So,
what were you playing?
Field Runner's Attack. Yeah. In fact, I should really get back to it. Yeah. Because,
all right, we're done here. Right?
We have an alliance event, and I haven't really earned my stars this week. But let's see. So there was a big thread of information about Twitter, fake Twitter followers. It was prompted by somebody who said that Donald Trump, half of his followers were fake.
They're Russian bots.
They were Russian bots. But I think...
I'm a Russian bot.
He is a Russian bot.
I think, in fact, it's always been half of the people on Twitter are fake.
Half sounds like it's an improvement.
That sounds low.
I think it's normally around one third, actually. Half is very much on the high side. Huh. It tends to range between 20% and 40%. Half is really on the high side for a major account like that.
But I don't think you blame. I guess the implication is that maybe Trump's team bought followers. But I think if you're the president of the United States, you probably get all the bots. Automatically, right? You just get all the bots.
Yeah, someone once told me that half the hits are are bots.
I feel like there are people with 70% bot followers. I really do. There is a site. I don't know how they would figure out if you're bots, but there is a place you can do to audit your Twitter.
Oh.
And somebody ran me, and I think I'm 30% bot.
That is not something I'm going to do.
You don't want to know.
No, I mean, I'm sure it's 90% for me.
The LinkedIn, I have,
why would
for
a
some
person
reason,
follow me?
For some reason, I have 130,000 LinkedIn followers, and there's a way to see where they're from, and they were mostly from these little African countries.
What's your Twitter handle?
Twitter?
Yeah. He doesn't even know. What's your Twitter?
P. Elmer DeWitt.
Oh, there it is. It's on the screen. It's Philip E. D.
No, that's that's Twitter. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wait.
Sorry.
That's Did you see the self-driving trucks in Logan? They were amazing.
I never saw them.
All right. I don't know. Okay.
My
81%. You're very good.
All right. Fine. Do me.
You only have 2,799 fake followers, according to Twitter.
How many do I have total?
You have, it says 12,171.
All right.
So, Philip, what's your... Phil Libin.
Just P. Libin.
P-L-I-B-I-N. Let's just
yep.
Let's just run this. And you are 90%. You are
wow.
really good. Only 10.
Real.
Wow.
Wow.
And wow.
How many total?
Okay, Mike
27,000.
Wow.
At Mike E-L-G-A-N. And you're 85. Okay, so.
I am more human than all of you guys.
So let's see. At Real Donald.
That is not what I would have expected.
Trump. Now, this will take a while. See, 47% real. So maybe it is a story. Let me do Leo Laporte. I do this with some trepidation. Me and Donald.
Yeah, you're down there.
Me and Donald. I'm only half real. Huh. I'm not a real boy.
What's your total, though?
200. Oh, see, this is, you have to add those up. So, yeah, it's close to 600,000, I think.
Wow. You are popular.
Very well done.
Well, no, I'm not, because half of them are fake.
But still.
Fake.
Still.
They're just AIs. Appeal to a certain kind of artificial intelligence.
It's
something
POTUS.
To be proud
what
of.
Is that POTUS?
I'm
50%
not
also. See, I figure it's not.
Yeah, he's
Trump's
in the millions, though. Yeah.
Yeah, but the reason is because if you're at POTUS or at Real Donald Trump, every bot follows you. If you're running a Twitter bot, you're going to follow those people, right?
How does that work? Why would you do that? Why does
I never understood that.
Oh.
What's Taylor Swift's handle? Because she's like big, right? No, I don't know what's going on. I think they want me now to sign up. So anyway, we're done.
Suspicious. All right.
We're done.
Huh, I'm 90% human. That's more than by weight.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
At Taylor Swift 13.
Oh, I didn't do her real handle. Okay. Supreme Court. Kind of, you know, this was a big decision that I didn't think got a lot of coverage. The Lexmark case. So this was decided in the Supreme Court this week by an 8-0 vote. The Supreme Court was hearing a case about a company that was taking Lexmark cartridges, refilling them.
These are printer cartridges?
Printer cartridges, inkjet cartridges. A company named Impression Products was refilling them. Lexmark sued, saying we have the patent on this and you can't refill them. The Supreme Court decided against Lexmark by 8-0. Actually, it ended up being revised because Ruth Bader Ginsburg said, well, okay, yeah, I agree, except it should be U.S. only. The 8-0 decision was originally U.S. and overseas. The point being that a patent and patent rights expire upon sale. In other words, if you buy something, you own it. This is huge.
This is a big deal.
This is a big deal. I was surprised to get more coverage, maybe because it seems so technical, but I think it...
It's got the word Lexmark in it.
So where else does it apply that it becomes huge?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with the right to repair movement, right? Because Apple, for instance, would very much like you to have to buy repairs and parts from Apple.
Right. That's why they used weird screws.
Right. This could be used to defend people who say, no, you own that phone.
Is it going to hold up when we actually have, like, fully self-aware robots that we can buy?
You know, you ask a really interesting question. Maybe we should just wait and ask the self-aware robots.
We should. We should wait until they're on the Supreme Court.
When they're on the Supreme Court. You know, I think it's time. By the way, I want a robot rights. It's time we got a self-aware robot on the Supreme Court.
Absolutely. The government jobs, forget the truckers. It's the government jobs that should be the first to go.
I think you're right. If you've ever been to DMV lately, oh, boy.
What do you think of...
It should be things that humans aren't good at, like politics.
Like politics.
Yeah, like making arbitrary decisions.
Our robot overlords. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, who is it? Bill Gates says they should... that robot makers should be taxed for the jobs that they
That's nuts.
Eliminate.
He says robots should be taxed.
Robots.
The robot maker.
No, the robots themselves. Well, the whole thing is nuts. It's crazy. The tax situation is all upside down. You should tax consumption, not production.
You should tax things you don't want, not things you do want.
Wait, what would be the thing I don't want?
We should tax things that, like when liquor. You tax something, it reduces it. So you should put taxes on things that you want fewer of.
Vice taxes.
Well, whatever.
Yeah.
Not that you want
this
more.
This isn't really the show to debate taxation, but speaking of Bill Gates.
Also, I don't know much about it.
Yeah, oh, God, this was too long. Couldn't read. I tried this one.
I will summarize because it's fantastic.
Okay. I tried to read it.
This is from Hacker Noon. This is a guy named Terry Crowley who worked on the Office division, wrote an article on where Microsoft took a wrong turn in the 90s.
Yeah.
And it really was Longhorn. And Bill Gates decided, and this is the fascinating thing in here, at some point, Bill Gates decided that HTML and the rich web had no future, that in fact, Windows presentation layer, Avalon, was the future of middleware.
Yeah.
And spent untold amounts of developer time and effort on building up Avalon and Vista and in deprecating the browser. In fact, most of the Internet Explorer team was moved off IE and over to Avalon.
I remember that.
Kind of a spectacular misunderstanding of what the future would be.
But it was so Microsoft. I mean, that's the way they saw things.
The whole history of Microsoft, he writes, from its origin is about the primacy of software over hardware. Hardware is a commodity. Value lies in software.
It's actually, I think, the supremacy of the buyer versus the user.
It's interesting you should say that because...
Which is like the opposite of what Apple... Like Apple's always been about the person using it, not necessarily the person buying it. Although in Apple's case, it's mostly the same person. Microsoft has been about the buyer, not the user.
Right. The buyer, not the user. What are they different?
Yeah, because in Microsoft's case, it's always like corporations. CIO or something.
Interesting.
The orifice.
The other thing I found fascinating, the reason I found this article is because the guy who took over after the debacle that was Vista, Steven Sinofsky, who created the Windows 7 team.
Big fan of Steven Sinofsky.
Heavily annotated this and recommended this article. Yeah. And so there's a second story going on as you read the article because what you're seeing really is Sinofsky is no longer at Microsoft. He can kind of speak his mind.
So they're annotating.
Andreessen Horowitz now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As you go along, there's underlinings. That's one of the things I like about Medium. You can see what other people have picked out. I'm not seeing them right now, maybe because I have an ad blocker on. But... there's underlines, and so you can see what Sinofsky says is really the issue here. And in a way, the second story is the successor at Microsoft, Steven Sinofsky, and what he really thinks. But he did it all with underlining. Anyway, it's worth reading. It's on HackerNoon.com, which is a Medium.
I wrote a note to Steve Ballmer at the time. When they first announced Vista.
Because Evernote was a big Windows product, right?
Yeah, still are. Yeah. But I wrote to Ballmer at the time saying that I see where they were going with the name because, you know, Vista is sort of a Windows-y name, But I thought it was a missed opportunity. If it was me, I would have gone with Windows Pane. That would have been better.
So Sinofsky might say.
I never heard back from Ballmer on that note.
What's happened, of course, is that the operating system now is really no longer important at all. It is, in fact, the presentation layer, and the winner was the web, and that's why you could do something like Chrome OS,
which really doesn't even
care about the operating system.
Operating system is pretty important. It's about to get a lot more important.
The platform is what they fight over now.
Okay, so here's my contention. The platform is the browser and the web. I don't care. And then one of the reasons I'm using Windows now is I don't care if I'm on Mac OS, Windows, or Chrome OS, because most of what I do is in a browser, right? You disagree with
until you get hit by WannaCry or something like that,
it's different on mobile.
Is
it different on mobile?
Well, we haven't had the right operating system for AI yet, and I think that's coming.
Oh boy, let's take a break and talk about that. We're almost done. Operating system for AI.
Isn't that Lisp?
What does that mean? Yeah, I'm learning Lisp.
I used to lift.
I'm halfway through SICP. I'm ready. I'll be ready for you when you need me. Just call me. I'll come in.
I learned,
can fix the 2038 problem. No problem.
I learned Lisp from Paul Graham's book.
Did you really? Yeah,
I did.
Great book.
Yeah, and yeah.
On Lisp.
On Lisp. Yeah, and then it took me like 20 years to realize that it was the same Paul Graham. And I got him to sign it.
He's
found
amazing.
It on a copy, and I got him to sign it. So it's like
all his books are amazing. Hackers and Artists.
One of my prized possessions.
That's a smart guy.
Super smart guy.
Yeah. Our show today brought to you by my shave, by Harry's. A great shave for a lot less than you're paying, about half what you're paying. Father's Day is just around the corner. Ooh, this Harry's would be a great Father's Day gift. I gave it to my son for graduation. Oh, no, for Christmas. He loved it, I have to say. Harry's knows that dads are tough to shop for. Do not give dad a tie. Unless Tad has a big bushy beard that goes all the way down to his chest and never uses a razor, you might want to take a look at Harry's. Actually, get one for yourself and then give one to Dad and the grads. Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price. They bought the factory in Germany. This is a great startup story. Harry's founders got a little money, you know, probably from somebody like you, Phil, an angel investor.
That's why there's an elephant on the package.
How do we disrupt? Is there really?
Yeah, right.
Oh, is that because of you?
No.
Oh, but it's actually a mastodon.
It's a mammoth.
It's a woolly mammoth.
Yeah.
But they don't want you to be a woolly mammoth.
Products with elephants on them are better than products without elephants on them.
So they got a little money and they said, how do we disrupt the shaving industry? It's really clear that it's even an adage. The model is you give away the razor and you make it up on the blade, and these blades are way overpriced. They realized the best thing we could do is buy the factory in Germany that makes the blades and sell it direct. So that's what you get. You get amazing, well-made blades designed to work great, give you a close, comfortable shave, and you get it for about half the price of those blades in the drugstore. Actually, I shouldn't say that anymore because you can actually find Harry. There they are, Jeff and Andy. You can actually find Harry's in the drugstore now, which I was really pleased to see, but you still get that great price. The Harry's kit will get you started with the razor handle, the moisturizing shave gel, three of Harry's 5-blade precision-engineered razors. They have a limited edition Father's Day shave kit. I don't think I have that here. Maybe I do. Show it on the... this is the orange one. This is the beautiful. It's beautiful. It's a storm gray razor handle. Plus, you get the chrome razor stand. You get the foaming shave gel, 3 replacement blades, the travel cover, which I will use tomorrow, and I use all the time. It's really a great idea to keep yourself from getting cut when you reach in your shaving kit to get your blade. I love it. Plus, it comes in a sleek, giftable box. You can even add custom engraving and a personalized card for free. This is a nice gift. And right now, get $5 off. Actually, any shave set at harrys.com/twit. Sean Parker's back. You know, he has a plan to let you rent movies that are still in theaters for $50.
I support this. This is great.
Would you do? I guess so, because it's like $13 to see a movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you have someone over, like I'm actually really angry that you still have to go to movies first, and the whole like movie distribution thing, like it pisses me off.
He created Napster. Music industry didn't like that too much, but his new thing in the Hollywood doesn't like it too much again. Oh. Is premium video on demand. His new acronym PVOD.
How does it work?
That's a winner.
PVOD. Well, the company's called Screening Room. So you rent the movie instead of the inexpensive, you know, $4 for a movie that's been out and out of the theaters and, you know, months later. You rent it for 48 hours for $50.
Yeah.
20% goes to the movie's distributor. A theater chain, I guess they're going to work with theater chains, would get up to $20. Each customer would get 2 tickets to see that title at the theater. Screening Room takes 10%.
Yeah, I think it's great. There's basically nothing.
I love this idea.
There is no upside to like sitting in a dark room with random people that you didn't choose to be with.
You probably have a nice home theater too.
I used to. Screen. Not anymore. I used to.
There's the smell of popcorn.
That's what you're doing. Plus, I don't.
What's happening in Fez? Sounds like a new party has started.
He's lost control of the mic.
This is Fez. I love this one. I use Delicious. Remember Delicious? Joshua Schachter's great bookmarking site. Got bought by Yahoo. Yahoo managed to kill it pretty good. Then the guys who started YouTube bought it, weirdly enough. Then they didn't want it, so they sold. It's been sold five times.
Wow. Yeah.
Five times. The YouTube founders bought it in 2011. They sold it to Science Incorporated in 2014. Science sold it to Delicious Media in 2016. And now, during this whole process, when Delicious was bought by Yahoo, I moved to Pinboard, because the guy who does Pinboard had this great model. If you get in early, you pay less. And as more people use it, his server costs go up, you pay more. I've been very happy. It's costing like $12. He must be doing all right, because he just bought Delicious.
There you go.
Machej, I don't know what you plan to do with Delicious. He doesn't really need it. He's duplicated the Delicious API. It's completely compatible with Delicious.
But apparently, it's such a cool service.
It is great. Apparently, yeah. All your bookmarks, if you use Delicious, are still there.
Yep.
They didn't delete anything. So yep. Maybe there'll be some future for Delicious. Speaking of Delicious.
We actually considered buying it. We talked to them.
Did you really?
We did. Yeah, at Evernote. Like, so years ago.
Yeah. Would have been a great buy.
Would have been, yeah. Came very close. Just didn't work out.
I use Pinboard. But yeah. All of this stuff is in Pinboard, and then I use Zapier to automatically put it into a spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
So that
you
we
know,
have the
run. You know what's funny, though? I mean, Delicious looms large in all of our minds, because at some point it was the flavor of the month, and it was the new hotness and all that stuff. You know, you're looking at, like, 2008 or something like that. It only acquired, like, 5.3 million users.
Yeah.
Compare that to Facebook or any social anything nowadays. That means it's amazing how tiny it was compared to how big we remember it,
And I think we remember it because we were journalists.
Right.
Maybe we were doing stuff. We're gonna wrap it up. I need to wrap it up, too.
Okay.
I think it's time to have a little quiet thank you for our fabulous hosts. Mike Elgin visiting us from Morocco. Wow, that was cool. Find out more about Mike and Amira and what they're up to at gastronomad.net and read his great writings in Computer World. I didn't even get to your fabulous article, which I talked about on the radio show, about why businesses should prepare for a laptop ban. Not that it's imminent, but when it happens, it will happen because there was an incident.
Yeah.
And it'll happen like that. And all of a sudden, you won't be able to carry laptops on an airplane.
It'll be like sneaker bomb.
It'll be a huge deal. So, Mike,
One of the reasons it'll be huge is because you probably won't be able to put it in checked luggage either.
Yeah.
Because that's even more dangerous.
That's the thing.
That's dangerous, too.
It's very dangerous.
There was a fire and a lithium-ion batteries burst into flame. But fortunately, they were in the cabin, where they could be dealt with. Had it been in the hold, it might have been a whole other matter.
Yeah, you need cloud services and airport laptop rentals.
Yeah,
exactly. But there were 33 fires from devices last year in the United States alone that were reported. And so imagine if half of those had ignited in the hold where crews couldn't put it out with a fire extinguisher.
Read Mike's piece. It's really good in Computer World, especially if you are a business. And you do a lot of business travel, this is something you need to prepare for. No question. Phil Libman, good luck. I'm so excited you were here the day before your new company, all-turtles.com.
My last few hours of not having real responsibility, so I'm pleased to have shared it with you.
You have to report to the office at 9 tomorrow morning?
I do. Got to be there at 9.
Nice.
Yeah.
We got to talk about fasting sometime, but not today. Because I got to run, because I got a plane to catch. I got to get out of here. But thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for asking me back.
You look great, and you come back anytime.
Thank you.
And I extend exactly the same offer to you, Philip Elmer DeWitt. Always nice to see you. Have fun tomorrow.
How
early are you going to get in line?
Well, I don't have to get in line because I have a press pass.
Ooh, I've heard about that.
But
the line is where you get all the best info.
I suppose. I don't know. We're from the developers. I don't know.
Nobody knows nothing.
But I'll have to work. I have to type. While it's happening.
We'll watch with great interest. We'll follow your blog at ped30.com. And, of course, we'll have our own streaming coverage tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 1700 UTC. I'm always rooting for Apple. I want them to be the Apple of yore. I just fear that there's not, that they don't have what it takes to become the Apple of yore.
I think I have to believe either they will deliver at some point things that will wow you.
Yeah.
Or it ain't going to happen.
They're just going to ride the phone into into the sunset.
Well, we've seen that happen before with Apple.
We've seen it happen with many companies. It's kind of the way it is.
What's amazing with Apple is that they've
come back. They had a second act. Thank you for joining us. We do This Week in Tech every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC. I won't be here for the next 2 weeks. Good news. Great co-hosts. We let them put together their own show. It's always interesting. Jason Snell next week. Jason Calacanis the week after. It should be a lot of fun, and I'll be back in 3 weeks. And in fact, I'll be back on June 18th or 19th, I guess, to do all the shows as usual. So I hope you'll join me then, and I hope you'll watch next week. You can always get the shows on demand at twit.tv or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. Do subscribe. We want you to get every single episode. Thanks for joining me, and we'll see you next time. Another twit.
This is amazing.
Doing the twit.